the Off the Ball Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yes, indeed, and it's bang on the button of 7:30 on this Friday morning. A very good morning to you. Welcome to OTB AM. Nathan Murphy twice, Louise Galvin, Paul Rose, and Johnny Ward. None of them could come close. Owen's been away for a number of weeks on a Friday, but I'm delighted to say it's, I mean, I know you've been back all week, but I feel entitled to welcome you back.
Thank you very much. That's some cast you've had over the last couple
cast
of weeks.
Cast of thousands, and none of them, Owen. A couple might have come close. Came close to replacing you.
How much of a fee does Nathan Murphy command on a Friday morning?
You couldn't even put a price on that man's appearance. What it does for the show.
Figures through the roof?
No, I mean, I'm suggesting maybe the exact opposite of that. No, we missed you. About the place.
Thanks a million. I missed you too.
Did you?
To a certain point.
You had a whale of a time. You, like, gorged yourself on the top table of rugby brilliance. Sometimes a bit shit, but mostly rugby brilliance over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I gorged myself in many ways on rugby brilliance, was certainly one of those. And yeah, it was a phenomenal couple of weeks. Absolutely brilliant. I won't claim otherwise. I won't claim that, you know, geez, it was hard work now and, you know, once you're working hard, you can't enjoy yourself.
The one failing that you've had on is not coming back and saying, Jesus, I am totally shattered. It's took so much out of me.
I'm actually feel more awake than I would on any other Friday, really, right, to be honest with you. Yeah, the jet lag's almost worked in my favour. Don't come back feeling that I've, you know, I feel like I've worked, but I haven't worked in a manner that's been negative for my mental health or anything like that.
So, yeah, so it's like a counterplay that you're trying to get yourself a trip to Japan every couple of weeks or something. Maybe
that would do nicely, actually. Thank you very much.
I'm on board with that. You had an unbelievable experience, obviously. I presume your recognition factor has gone through the roof over the last couple of months.
I wouldn't be able to comment on any recognition factor or anything like that.
You would, because, like, you know, You either have more people coming up to you saying, "Oh, you're that guy," or you don't.
Yeah, like I couldn't tell you whether or not that's the case or not, to be quite honest with you. It was just a brilliant few weeks, to be honest. It was like have you been to Japan?
No.
No, you've been to Asia a couple of times.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how different it is to various big cities across Asia. I presume every city kind of has their own mark on it, but even just within the country itself, the uniqueness of the country is instantly recognisable. And everybody said it. Like, every kind of diary piece you read in the newspapers or hear anybody talk about their experience over there, everybody kind of comes back to the kind of friendly atmosphere they got from the country, especially when it comes to the people. And you kind of forget that that's actually the most important thing about any country, is actually the conversations you have and the communication you have in a country. And they were extremely, extremely welcoming. Right. And that marriage of Irish and Japanese people, when it came to supporters, when it came to journalists to a certain point, and when it came to just people as a whole over the last couple of weeks, it was fantastic. It was absolutely brilliant.
Apart from that night in the hospital when you had the hand, there wasn't communication that night. Didn't seem to be, of the most impeccable.
No, so I was extremely angry that night, I'm not going to lie.
Were you?
Yeah, I was in a bad mood. If you want to get me in a bad mood, give me a potentially fatal ailment and stick me on a train for 2.5 hours. So
there was a tipping point there. You were stuck in the train and it was like this. The hand is getting close to the point where you think the skin might sort of give way in an explosive sense.
Yeah, amputation level was getting close. Like, so we were at Wales, Fiji, and just kind of sitting in the train station doing a bit of work beforehand. I could almost kind of like see it getting bigger and bigger, and I was like, well, this is obviously hilarious. So I put up the photos on...
Classic Owen Sheehan. Like, the first thing you do is not contact somebody and say, listen, I've been bitten and this doesn't look great. Oh, I'll tweet it.
I kind of regretted tweeting it because of the hysteria that it caused, but the hysteria was probably well placed. And basically got stuck on a train then. Not stuck on a train. The train was always going to take 2.5 hours. It's not like it was a mystery. From Oita up to Fukuoka, and then got taken to a hospital. Was the only person in the hospital, and it took me, I suppose, about 2 hours to actually get told straight up what needs to happen here. So during the course of that 2 hours, I was getting more and more frustrated. Mm. My hand was red. I was turning green with fury. And then they moved me on to another hospital where, again, there was nobody there. And yet it took ages for me to be seen. And eventually the doctor was like, in Japanese, presumably, what's wrong with your hand? Like, we couldn't understand one another. Mm. And I was like, maybe I need antihistamine. And that was the one word he picked up. He's like, antihistamine, antihistamine. Here's a tablet, go home. So after 6.5 hours of worrying about my hand, that was it.
Maybe I need antihistamine, yeah. Well, listen, fair play. It's great to have you back. Your Twitter followers are up massively.
Are they, yeah?
Come on now. Come on now. Don't be coy here.
I'm not going to be coy about anything. Anybody who watches their own Twitter followers needs to get a life.
But you've been away for like whatever it is, a couple of months. At some point or another, you checked your Twitter followers. I'm reliably informed. This is not news to you because you definitely know this. So come on now. That your Twitter followers have gone up 2,000.
Yeah, Tommy and Jared both made the point that it was actually 3,000. But
you're right.
I went and checked it and no, it was.
I see you did check it. So you're like one of the most rugby influential people in the country.
Okay, stop that now. Let's like this. I'm just waiting for like the punchline
no,
here.
This is actually quite a serious topic.
Okay.
One of the most serious topics we have this morning. Like this, and this is also not just me just throwing this information out there as, oh no, maybe Blythley is like one of the most influential. Like it's actually an actual fact. There's been research and there's been a press release and you are literally one of the most influential rugby people in the country. Brandon Driscoll, our own Brandon Driscoll comes in at number one, by the way, on this list from the Reputations Agency. This is a real thing. Brandon Driscoll is number one on this list of the most influential, what do they call it? Most influential rugby pundits on social media, based on insights derived from influencer marketing software platform, based on your ability to drive action through your social media influence zone. So the top 10, Brian O'Driscoll, I mean our own Brian O'Driscoll, is straight in there at number one. Greg O'Shea, you know that lad?
Never heard of him.
Tommy Bow, Ronan O'Gara, who we're going to talk to a little bit later in the show, is at number four. Jamie Heaslip and Paul O'Connell, Ian Madigan, Stephen Ferris, Jerry Flannery and Peter Stringer. Some of those are tied. That's the top 10. But straight in at number 16 is the joint combination of Brent Pope and Owen Shane. You and Brent Pope are on an even footing when it comes to rugby influence in this country. That is a fact.
That is the most ridiculous thing that's ever been said.
This is not just some nonsense insight that's been sort of plucked out of fresh, some, you know, some hooker's hole. This is actually a fact.
That is absolutely absurd. That's just ridiculous. Brent Pope, who's 10 to 15?
I've no idea, but congratulations is all. I mean, I'm sure there's some other.
When was this list published?
Yesterday. Maybe even today.
Well, you know, nobody told me about it, so it's clearly been a well-circulated one.
Gareth Field, who is part of the group who runs the Reputations Agency, says the research clearly shows that when it comes to social media, Irish rugby personalities reach and exert a huge influence among their diverse social media following. The use of influencers has become an important channel for so many Irish brands and marketeers. So when it comes to identifying who to work with, this research clearly shows that there is no better place to start than Ireland's sporting heroes and Owen.
I can't believe you're just like making this up completely.
This is an actual fact.
It sounds like a very convoluted Adrian Barry top of the show.
No. Joined 16th with Brent Pope.
I need to read this thing before any further comment.
No, congratulations.
Like, you can't be referred to as an influencer unless you've got a 10,000 Instagram followers, is what I would say.
Well, your followers are up 3/2,000, so I mean...
It's on Twitter, really, isn't it? I mean,
oh, you're not having... Twitter's not where it's at.
Like, I'm sure Brent has got his 10K Instagram followers.
I think yourself and Brent should get together and see what sort of... You could, if there's any synergies there.
Yeah, 100%. I'd say our synergy level is exactly the same, actually.
Right, well, if you've got any thoughts about Owen Shane's brilliant couple of months in Japan or indeed his Twitter following or what sort of an influencer he is, we would love to hear from you this morning. It's 7:38 on this Friday morning. We've plenty coming for you. We're going to let you know what's happening in the show in just a minute. But first, let's bring you back to yesterday's OTBM. Jerrin Omer in studio discussing the state of the Irish rugby team.
Okay, well, we're talking Ireland's World Cup and the debacle that was, yet again, the quarterfinal disaster. And, how could this happen? Where did it go wrong? Last year we were kings of the world, couldn't lose. Beat everyone, beat the world champions, back-to-back world champions. And just when it mattered most, just when we were on the precipice of making history, we fell apart. So, I mean, Owen, you were there. Explain, please. How could this happen?
Well, I think we're all asking the same question. You know, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And how can we avoid this happening again?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I just said.
Yeah, I know, but I think it's worth repeating, mainly because we've got loads of time to fill in this particular show. And, you know, I think we have to repeat things in order to flesh them out. I mean, what can we say other than the fact that, you know, we're not as good at rugby as we thought we were? I mean, that's about the height of it.
True, yeah. But so what are we saying here? I mean, how can this happen?
Yeah, I know exactly. I mean, how can this happen? I mean, you know, how can this happen? And I mean, you know, I suppose maybe if we put the emphasis on a different word each time we repeat the same thing, it won't sound like we're actually repeating it. Like, how can this happen? How can this happen? How can this happen? Or how can this happen? In terms of every word in the sentence sounds a bit different.
I don't know, but I think that's probably as much time as we can get out of asking that particular question. But I suppose maybe that's the problem with Irish rugby. You know, maybe we've been asking the same question for too long. Maybe we need to ask a bigger question, like, I don't know, like, where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, that's true. But I suppose ultimately, the question is, you know, where do we go from here? I mean, where do we go from here?
Exactly, yeah. Like, where do we go from here? And maybe the person who can answer that very question is not here at all, because he's in Japan. And that is, of course, Alan Quinlan. There are many and varied storms in Japan, but probably nothing to compare to the shitstorm that we have right now back home. It's been an incredibly disappointing World Cup, right?
Yeah, look, Jor, it's grand, you know. It's disappointing, obviously, but I think we probably need to calm the heads a bit.
But, I mean, what is it to be calm about? I mean, this is a disaster, right?
Yeah, well, look, you know, I think it was huge for Japan, you know, huge. It was huge for them, you know, and people have been giving out about this World Cup, but, you know, apart from the humidity and the hurricanes, the typhoons, the earthquake, the cancelled fixtures, the refs being shite and Ireland being hammered, I think it's been a great World Cup.
Well, it's been okay for you because you've been travelling around Japan.
You know, it's been huge for me, Ger, you know, huge. The whole experience has been huge and tough as well, though, you know, travelling from match to match and sitting on me hole talking about rugby till I'm blue in the face. And that's not easy, Ger. And all the time trying to get my head around how to pronounce names like Kanagawa and Kumamoto and Osaka, Higashi, Osaka and Kamashi, and probably the toughest of all, and but kind of my favourite, is Fukuoka.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there before you say something that we can't actually broadcast. Congratulations on making every Japanese city that you've just pronounced sound like an expletive. Okay, I'm going to say shit and crap, by the way, just to bring some edge to proceedings. That's edge in association with Vodafone. Okay. After the break, we'll delve deeper into the big question, where do we go from here? Or to put it another way, where do we go from here? Yeah, you know, well, bed would be my preference. I'm exhausted with this crap. Asking the same question. No answer. Cheers.
Richard's rugger thing.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was more to that. There was like the whole kicker right at the end there. We got that recued. Well.
Richard's an absolute genius, isn't he?
That is brilliant.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Oh, sorry. I'm a bit of a mugger here.
You can't really, like, there's nothing else to say about it. He's just absolutely phenomenal.
I've pain in my face and a pain in my stomach from laughing at that.
Yeah.
I don't know what the etiquette is. I watched it for the first time live yesterday with Jer, who took it as equally well as yourself. I don't know what the etiquette is about how you should. Oh, here we go, watch this.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I don't know what the etiquette is. If you should, like, if it's proper etiquette to not laugh, but it's bloody funny.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You never think it could happen to you, and then
no. Didn't
you actually hear? You're like, there's no way that could possibly. There's no way I have anything that could possibly be taken off, and then it turns out there's a whole goldmine of stuff.
That's an incredible career highlight, though. To be fair, like, isn't it? That's
for Richard, yeah, fair play for him. Yeah. It's the height of his career. I met him in the bathroom actually yesterday after he had just recorded,
right. And he
was kind of like, I'm sorry in advance, but no, it's just perfect. It's so good. His I like.
Oh,
I will say it. I'm not sure. I'm being anti-biased to myself here, but I just think his Gilroy is like the best. I think his Gerrard is just good. It's better than anything else at the moment.
Let's not get into trying to repeat how great it is. But it is a 7:45 this Friday morning. Delighted to have you along with us. You're watching OTBM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball, and you just would have seen your screen there a reminder as well that Richard's been doing some brilliant stuff over the last couple of months, and it's all up and available to watch on offtheball.com. He's got Eddie Jones, I'm reliably informed, coming a little bit later on today as well, so something else to look forward to for you over the course of your Friday. But it is, as I said, 7:45 on this Friday morning. There is some actual sports stuff happening between now and 9:30, and here's a bit of a flavour of what that is. We're going to pick through the back pages in just a few minutes' time. A couple of stories primarily dominating the back pages. Today we'll let you know what's going on there in a few moments. We're going to talk Rugby World Cup in the company of Ronan O'Gara just after 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on what it is. It's the first time we've had an opportunity to speak to him after Ireland's exit, so we'll get his thoughts on all of that and the future for Andy Farrell. And, of course, the two Rugby World Cup semi-finals as well. Still the matter of a final, of course, to be played out too. Alan Quinlan will also get his look ahead to a pretty big weekend in Japan. That's coming your way just before 8:30 this morning. The sports news with Phil Egan. Phil Thompson's going to join us as well on the line to look ahead to Liverpool Spurs. Is pretty much the game of the weekend. He told us last weekend that not one Manchester United player was going to get in that Liverpool team. But as it turned out, United did pretty well. And they beat them 1-1 is what happened at Old Trafford last week. And we'll get Phil's thoughts on that as well as looking ahead to that Tottenham game as well. And a very special departure for you this morning. We've got, it's no coincidence that the Crabby Quiz, Owen is back and the Crabby Quiz is back. And we're going to be doing it on O2BAM this morning from just after 9 o'clock. So that's a good flavour of what's happening today. But we are going to kick things off now with the newspapers. 7:47, you're watching O2BAM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. I'm going to start you with the Irish Examiner this morning. And I mentioned there are a couple of stories that dominate the back pages this morning. And this man is very much one of them here. The finishing line, it says here, Mark O'Shea and John Dively pay tribute to the retiring Dublin legend, Bernard Brogan. There isn't any question about that. He was there through the dark days, that's for sure. So plenty of thoughts on him inside. The manner of Ireland's World Cup exit was so bad on many levels, writes Ronan O'Gara in his regular Friday column there as well. And plenty more inside. Bernard Brogan dominates a lot of the newspapers this morning. Owen, a man who tormented many the Kerry defender in his day.
Yeah, and Mayo defender, I think it's fair to say, like, probably brought his best against those two opposition, I would have thought. It's kind of tough to pick out what exactly was the peak moment of Bernard Brogan's career, because so often you might think to yourself, 2010 might have been when Bernard Brogan peaked, and then you think to yourself, actually, it was 2013 when Bernard Brogan peaked. And, like, I guess for somebody to be at the very top of his game for those four full seasons, really, is fairly exceptional, in my opinion. Maybe 2012, there might have been a little bit of a drop-off, but like certainly the other three, this is a person who is could be looked at as the best forward in the country at the time, or certainly there was a bit of an argument. I suppose he came into prominence at a time when Dublin were struggling, so not only did he have to come through with just pure brilliance in terms of being a top-class shooting forward for his team, he also had to come through with kind of a professionalism and an attitude towards success that a lot of the Dubs around him just didn't have, because they hadn't been All-Ireland winners. And to come from that base and to take them to an All-Ireland winning team and to become one of the greatest teams of all time, possibly the greatest team of all time, that's something seriously special. So, you wish him well in his retirement. It's no surprise, really, that it's happened. And you just imagine how tough it might have been for him over the last couple of years.
Well, he was in a few weeks ago, and he was saying that at that point, I'm going to sit down with Jim. I think at that point, he was saying maybe later in the week, it was on the radar anyway. And, like, I don't know what you're hoping for from that conversation. I'm sure you're looking at both eventualities, one of them being Jim saying to him, listen, we've still got a relatively young group, and you still have something to offer. You're not going to see a huge amount of game time, but we'd love to have you around the place. And whether that would be enough for him to put himself through another year of it, given, you know, the tough 12 months he's just had, you suspect that maybe that after the first game where he wasn't included in the squad, that might have been formed part of his thinking that, like, this Dublin team, really, no matter what you think, they are going to win three of the next five All-Irelands. Might be worth hanging around for a while. And then, but obviously getting back into the squad then, it was like, right, well, actually, this definitely is my swan song now. I'm going to get on the pitch, whether I feature or not. I'm going to get on the pitch at some point in the end and get the obligatory photograph with the kids in my full gear. I'm not going to have to do a John Terry on it. But as a style of a player, like, he was really somebody that stood out. I know, like, you hear Kieran Donaghy talk about having, late in his career, having conversations with Colm Cooper about how to, you know, the the different goal scoring styles, like the taking the net out of it versus the nice little stroke into the goal when it comes to it. And he was definitely that type of player who would have the capacity to open his body, and like he wasn't the sort of player who was going to be drilling that ball home. He had such an unbelievable level of skill about him.
Yeah, he did. Like, there were one attraction for him, I'd say, in terms of him staying on would have been to actually get another All-Ireland medal and to get to 8. Like, to finish up on 7, he might have been looking around at a point in his career thinking to himself, if I can just hang on in and say if I make it to the end of 2019 getting minutes, then perhaps if I fade into the background then, I'm sure he wasn't thinking this way, but if I fade into the background then and perhaps manage to pick up a medal or two as a sub, then I can potentially become one of the first footballers to get to 9 All-Ireland football medals. But that wasn't the case. Like, it was always going to be clear that this year he was going to finish up. And when you talk about style, it was very striking the way he played football. He didn't need much space. He needed no space at all. Mm. He could do a bit of everything. And like at times, he was the beating heart of a forward line. Whereas now you've got a Dublin team where they just have a full forward line that could possibly go down as one of the greatest attacking lines we've seen in football, especially the way you've got Rock, O'Callaghan and Mannion playing at the moment. Whereas 6-7 years ago, you're thinking to yourself, what is a Dublin full forward line? Bernard Brogan and 2 others. Mm. And that's not the case right now. So it's he represents the perfect transition of Dublin from a team of mavericks to an absolute machine, which is what they are now. A machine made up of hugely talented players, don't get me wrong, but he was instrumental in that change as well. Like, Pat Kilroy takes a lot of credit, Jim Gavin obviously takes a lot of credit, but having a player like Bernard Brogan to actually be the personification of Gilroy's thoughts on the pitch in that transition from the chaos years, as it was put in that book last year, to the dominant years, that's what the legacy of Bernard Brogan is for me. The Irish Times this morning, Leeds with the Europa League, and great picture of Anthony Martial there. Martial on the spot to give United win in Belgrade. They beat Partizan 1-0 last night, his penalty in the 43rd minute clinching the points for them. Pepe scores 2 as Arsenal regain the upper hand. Visitors Vitória take the lead, but 2 free kicks save home side's blushes. Pretty incredible stuff from Nicolas Pepe from free kicks last night. And you've also got Celtic's win against Lazio last night, and Derry aiming to finish the job and clinch European place. That's on the SSC Electricity League. And then Gerry Thornley in Tokyo saying New Zealand have what it takes to survive a mighty collision. And then Jones urges England to knock All Blacks off their perch.
Yeah, that little war of words has been kind of interesting this week. The Irish Daily Star this morning, goodbye to the Hill, is the banner up here with that photograph of Bernard Brogan after the Ireland final this year. Jim Gavin's thoughts on that there as well from Carlo Kane. And Vinnie Murphy saying, Brogan going could leave Dubs lacking leaders. I mean, I think that's a bit of a stretch, to be fair. Kerr is open to return, writes Paul Lennon here. These are comments from the former Republic of Ireland manager who was on Virgin Sport Media during the week, talking about that if the call did come from the FAI, it's something he would be open to. Some interesting quotes. He says, if and when the association has the board sorted out and they get a new CEO at that stage, if they decide that if somebody with a bit of authority wanted to talk to me about a possible role or otherwise, if they decide they didn't want to, then that's their prerogative. I'll have no problem whatsoever giving opinions and discussing the various elements of it. Talks about, there's a good line in one of them about Noel Mooney, and he says he should stop doing a lot of interviews, essentially, and get on about appointing a new CEO, is what he says. He's not been impressed. Noel Mooney's been on the circuit over the last couple of weeks doing various interviews. And I suppose trying to shine a light on the job that he's doing. But, I mean, he's departing in about 2 weeks' time. I don't know. It's all a bit bizarre. The whole thing's still a little bit bizarre for me in a way that, I don't know. Brian Kerr is saying, stop doing the interviews, get about your business. There's stuff to be done. There's a board to be appointed. There's a new CEO to be brought in. Unless it's a bit of a play on Noel Mooney's part to, you know, he's very much been saying, that's not a job I'm interested in, I'm not into it. But I'm sure if somebody was to, you know, come and try to rubber arm him into it, that will be a conversation to be had. So unless it's a play in that regard, I really don't know. But interesting timing, I suppose, would be my observation on it. Also, Brand Aid is the reflection on last night's game of the Europa League. Youngster Williams comes to Ole's rescue.
Party Time reads the headline on the back page of the Mirror this morning. Ole hails United's brave kids as Martial ends long away jinx. And Gavin hails Brogan, a leader who inspired all around him. And you've got the Brian Kerr story as well. Forget media, Noel, and do your job. fairly ruthless stuff from Brian Kerr, responding to a man who literally said 24 hours previously, "I will beg you to come back." It's like a fairly, a cutting ex who will not text you back, basically.
Brian Kerr is not... Stop texting me.
Yeah, stop. Go on about your life.
Get on your life, exactly.
Move on. Mm. Don't be texting me, Noel. And that's kind of the sense I get. You can kind of, like... You can see where Brian Kerr is coming from here, without question. Like, the person who's in charge of the FAI for the moment should be going on about this. But I'm sure Noel Mooney perhaps meant well when he was coming out and literally saying, "I'm begging you to come back."
Well, I don't know what he meant, I suppose, is the thing. Like, nobody knows actually what he means, because I think that from a PR point of view, having Brian Kerr back at the FAI would be the most... best coup that they could possibly have, right? So what the motivation for it is, I really don't know, but... and I'm none the wiser having listened to a couple of those podcasts about what his motivation for coming out and doing those pieces is. We shall see what happens over the next few weeks. The Irish Independent on this Friday morning is a great photograph of Ciara Mageen. It just happens to be in mid-stride there on the edge of a cliff. But I mean, it's a lovely photograph. Let's not take away from that. Mageen hails USADA probe into disgraced coach Salazar, writes Carl Dennehy here. Ciara Mageen, again, stating her fulsome stance behind anti-doping in athletics. That's that story there. And then Martin Breheny and Colm Keyes writing about Galway weighing up a bid for Kieran Carey. An interesting line here. The former Limerick star could land tribesman job there, right, after leading Patrick's Well to Shannon's side title. This is a bit of a left field one that's obviously coming hard on the foot of Davy Fitz signing up again with Wexford, who's one of the favourites obviously to get that Galway job. And then you had Franny Ford and Noel Arkin, who were planning a joint... there had been a plan for a joint appointment around the two lads withdrawing their candidacy in the last couple of weeks too. So Kieran Carey, the almost unlikely candidate in some regards, for a team that, I mean, I find it incredible that for a team that are maybe third favourites to win the All-Ireland are really struggling big time to appoint a manager.
Yeah, it's been a disastrous off-season for Galway, hasn't it? They need to get that sorted now. Like, I mean, what are we... November is the start of the GAA season, traditionally, so they basically need to get this done in the next week or you're kind of losing time. I think they've already lost time. To be honest, like, club seasons are wrapping up everywhere and that is part of your reconnaissance mission. Fair enough if you're actually based inside in the county and you're like, well, it's second nature to me. I know who all the good club players are. I know who are in form. But, like, Kieran Carey's been looking after a club in a different county. He's not exactly got all the ins and outs of Galway club hurling going on in terms of his view. So, I don't know. It doesn't look great. I think Carey is obviously would be a great appointment, I think, for most counties. He's going to be in an immediately difficult position if he ends up taking that job. And hopefully things work out for him if he does end up taking that job and becomes Galway manager. Back page of the Sun is one for the road. Olé's away drought is over. Frank ban aid. Chelsea are confident their transfer ban will be lifted and they are preparing to sign players in January. You've got news here as well of Kieran Lucid's All-Ireland League consortium enlisting Intercube to put together a new database proposal for a new league. The Dutch company helped UEFA redesign the Champions League and Europa League in the past. And Willie Mullins has called on Supreme Horse Racing Club to get their house in order after the syndicate's account was frozen by Horse Racing Ireland.
The Irish Daily Mail this morning, get to work, Kerr takes aim at FAI but is open to offers, is the story there by Philip Quinn, we've mentioned for you a couple of minutes ago. And King of the Hill bows out by Michael Clifford in reaction to Bernie Brogan.
The London Times leads with a picture of Owen Farrell here. The headline reads, "Jones's rallying cry, let's get ready to rumble." And Pepe rescues Arsenal meanwhile. Record signing scores 2 free kicks and 3-2 Europa win. And Leicester, 1 year on, how tragedy of owner's death made club stronger.
The Irish Sun this morning, one for the road, is more reflections on Anthony Martial back for United last night and back among the goals as well. All his away drought is over as United beat Partizan Belgrade by a goal to nil.
I just did that a moment ago. Back page of the Herald is Jim saying, "Dublin are truly grateful." So that's Jim Gavin, obviously, leaving tributes to Brogan after retirement from 15 years in blue. And Pepe saves Gunners as Celts slay Lazio. A couple of more back pages here, I think. We've gone through some of them. Eddie Jones's photo, his mug on the back of a lot of the papers. They've got a special Rugby World Cup semi-final supplement in the Telegraph today. And on the main sports section, "Let's knock them off their perch," Jones tells England to change rugby history by beating New Zealand. First time in 20 years they're going to meet at a Rugby World Cup. Dethrone the All Blacks and change history, Jones urges England. And you've got a picture there as well of Nicolas Pepe and Matteo Guendouzi celebrating Arsenal's winner against Vitória last night at the Emirates Stadium. And then the Racing Post, their rugby stories on the back. On top of the world, two-time champions All Blacks primed to edge England once again.
That is the newspapers on this Friday morning. Very good.
Sure is.
Check out offtheball.com as well for plenty more on that too. We've lots coming your way. We're going to talk to Phil Thompson about the weekend of Premier League, particularly that Liverpool-Spurs game. We've Alan Quinlan going to be joining us on the line to get ahead to those two World Cup semi-finals. If you've got any thoughts on that, please do let us know what you're thinking. Which way are they going to go? Is it going to be New Zealand and South Africa, or can the two Six Nations teams cause a bit of an upset this weekend? We'd be fascinated to get your thoughts on all of that. And Ron Rigar is on the way as well. He's going to look back on the weekend that was for Irish rugby, or the week that was, I suppose, and maybe indeed the year for Irish rugby, and where it is that we go for from now. It's just gone 8 o'clock on this Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. And all this week on OTB AM, we're giving you the opportunity to win UEFA Champions League quarterfinal tickets, all with thanks to Pepsi Max, one of the proud sponsors of the UEFA Champions League. Every entry this week is going to be entered into this morning's final, but we'll also have Pepsi promotion packs up for grabs for our daily winners right here on OTB AM. You've got one more hour or thereabouts to enter and make it into the draw later this morning. To be in with the chance of winning this morning, share the show wherever it is you're watching or listening and tell us who has scored the most Champions League goals after Ronaldo and Messi. Just a reminder that if you don't win on OTB AM this week, there are more ways to win with Pepsi Max. With more than 20 tickets up for grabs for games in the Champions League group stages, you can check out pepsimax.ie for much more on all of that. Pepsi Max, maximum taste, no sugar. All right, it is 8:02 on this Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM. We're talking rugby with Ronan Agar in just a few moments. But before all of that, let's go back to our Heineken Rugby Club roadshow in Crane Lane Theatre earlier this week down in Cork. Here's David Wallace on the job that Andy Farrell has ahead of him.
I think he's under less pressure, because I think if they were coming off a high of a good World Cup, or if they got to the semi-final or final or whatever with Joe, that I think he'd be under more pressure to stick to what Joe had done or instilled in the team and continue that and maybe develop a little bit. But now I think it gives him a bit of breathing room, it's a bit of a catalyst for change, because that disappointment will say, well, look, we need to change things around, and maybe the players will step up a little bit more. If they weren't happy with that style or enjoying it, as we're saying, like they are with Leinster or Munster or Ulster or wherever, Connacht, you know, that they can bring that style into the Irish team and maybe have their voices back a bit. Because at the end of the day, it's those guys who are out in the field want to be happy with what they're doing. Maybe it will open a window for that bit of change.
Yeah, we'll only see the evidence of that, obviously. There isn't, to be fair, actually even a huge amount of turnaround time here, obviously, into the Six Nations. It's really only a couple of months. And you kind of assume also that, like we were talking about, the work that Kieran Carey might have the capacity to do, outside of actually working with the players, there's so much more to be done. It's the same for Andy Farrell, and you assume that he hasn't given it too much thought, really.
Yeah.
Before now, like, they've been kind of focused on the World Cup.
Andy Farrell needs to be at Munster against Ospreys tonight, for example. He needs to be watching Ulster this weekend. He needs to get to all the provinces. He needs to see who these next wave of kids are. But on top of that, he needs to also get tape back of all the Pro 14 games that have happened so far, whatever it is, three, I think, so far, and actually get up to speed on the depth of knowledge that is required from an Ireland head coach. Because if nothing else, that's one of the pieces that Joe Schmidt has left behind, that to be in that position, to be a successful Ireland head coach, you need to know everything about Irish rugby, and whatever about the drastic failures that we've seen on Schmidt's end at the end of the Rugby World Cup, one of the things that he seemed to have achieved was just a huge degree of thoroughness, and that's something that he's brought to the table. So that's the first job for Farrell, research.
Yeah, and he should be coming into it in such a high, obviously, is the thing, right? I think he should be coming in with a smile on his face and huge amount of positivity and all that stuff, but we shall see. Delighted to say, from Japan, Ronan Agar joins us on the line. Morning to you, Ronan.
Hey, lads, how are you?
We're all, as a nation, I think, trying to get our head around this entire thing. A first chance to have a chat with you, obviously, after what happened last week, and, like, as a nation, struggling to get our heads around the, like, undoubted and inarguable success that Josh Schmidt has had over the last number of years, and what's happened over the last, I suppose, 12 months, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a good way of putting it. We are all struggling, I think, looking for answers, because there was such a non-performance at the weekend that you know, it's completely the opposite you expected of a Joe Smith team, and on the biggest stage of all, the quarterfinal of a World Cup, which is essentially the biggest tournament for 4 years. And it just didn't look like Ireland at all.
Yeah. You made the point yourself in the paper this morning, that they examined it this morning, that there's no point in picking through that game in too much depth, so we won't do that. But like over 12 months ago, but we won a Grand Slam not that long ago. Was it a case that like teams started to figure us out, or was it a case that teams were actually themselves really just working up to a World Cup in a way that it seems now that we weren't?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's most definitely the case. I think we are better probably in between World Cups, but that shouldn't necessarily be the case. I think, I think after 11, there was a lot of, question marks asked, and rightly so, because it was a great opportunity to get to a semi-final against Wales. And after the highs of beating Australia, I don't think our mental capacity was good enough to be able to put in two big performances in a row when it mattered most. And you know, you even go back as far as 2003, which a last-minute opportunity to beat Australia, which could have meant Scotland in the quarterfinal of a Rugby World Cup. And now this thing has grown into a monster, and not being able to get beyond the quarterfinal stage. But it just, our mental approach is the complete opposite to New Zealand. They absolutely thrive when the pressure comes on. And we as a nation don't.
Like, I know it's a very small thing, but the two performances in a row thing, Ronan, is very interesting, because we can blame injuries and all of that for what happened in 2015 as well. But there's also probably an element of not being able to put in two performances in a row as well after beating the French.
100% correct, yes. Like, I think that was, you know, and I'm not having a go and saying it was convenient in 2015. It was still a deficit of 20-odd points we were beaten by Argentina by. So, yes, we emptied the tank against France, but then 7 days later, we're nowhere near at the pitch to confront a rampant Argentinian team. But between 2015 and 2019, you would have thought that there was a big scope there in that regard to get better. But, I don't think you're unlucky in two World Cups. We have to take harsh lessons and messages out of this World Cup if a lot of us that genuinely care about Irish rugby want them to succeed going forward, because it's only when you leave maybe Ireland and you see it from a different angle. But the World Cups, it has become a non-performing environment for us, and that needs to change. But there's a great saying that if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got. So unless we take on board this and you're serious for change, nothing will change, because we'll go hell for leather now for the next 3 years, but you're peaking another 12 months too early, because I would like to think for sports people that the World Cup is the stage to be measured on going forward. And in the past, maybe we didn't do that for whatever reason, but I think now it's blatantly obvious to what other nations are measuring themselves from.
Yeah, like even listening to what Joe Smith had to say, like the closest thing that I could come to some sort of rationale about it afterwards was listening to him talk about that maybe we'd been too focused on a quarter final, like, which in itself almost is like defeatist almost to a degree, right? Like, 'cause that, you're not setting yourself up to play back-to-back monster games. You're just happy to win a quarter final, which, you know, I mean, I know it's all hindsight, and we're analysing, picking to death the comments afterwards, but like, we're so focused on a quarter final that we weren't talking about winning the World Cup. We just wanted to win a quarter final here.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, that was probably the internal talk. I think those players would have been, and is the right story. But I think for me, once you saw the twick in them, even though I didn't even think I watched that game live, but a result like that, irrespective, away from home in Twickenham, it just makes you sit up and take notice and go on, because whatever team played that day, it was still the squad of players that were going to a World Cup. And if you're taking, nearly 50 points in a World Cup warm-up, I think I tried to make the point that it isn't a fitness issue, I don't think. There's something with the rugby, or something with the mindset that isn't right going into it. So we were hoping that it would get fixed in the day or at the competition, but it actually got worse as we progressed.
Yeah, like, obviously, interesting your thoughts, given your where you're coaching at the minute. Like, if you look at France and their record, right, they've won the Six Nations once in the last 12 years. We've won it four times in that period, yet France have been to two Rugby World Cup semi-finals, 07 and 11, and obviously made it to that final and maybe should have won it. And if they hadn't lost the head last weekend, that would have been three. Like, they disappear, essentially, for 4 years and turn up at a World Cup. And our methodology seems to be the exact reverse of that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think the French model is the one to follow, but I get your
fair point.
As you say, from a moment of ill discipline, France should be playing South Africa this weekend. They were the better rugby team on the day, and Gatlin said as much. But I think what is very interesting in the fact that, of that is at least France played. This is a team that was probably an Irish team that was ranked number one in the world, but on the biggest stage of all, it didn't fire a shot at the knockout stages. And I genuinely believe that we are good at, some people are saying that we're good in a league system and on a league basis, but I think we have the mindset for Cup Rugby, and maybe a lot of people are forgetting that point. But I think, I think France, at least they gave it a go and they had a crack. From an Irish viewpoint or from a player's point of view, they must be so frustrated.
You kind of hinted at it there a little bit earlier on, but just that sacrificing success almost in the short term, and the Six Nations is a huge revenue driver for that, for Irish rugby in general. So I don't know
that's the question. All these topics have to be put on the table, and then at least I think you know where you're playing, where the goalposts are, and you're looking to see, is it realistic, or is the World Cup, is it not of number one interest? But I would think anyone with a sporting ambition, that's where, I mean, the thought of winning a Rugby World Cup is the greatest driver of all time for anyone involved in Irish rugby, or Irish sport for that matter, I would think, because that's something that motivates. And I think that's why, we're still a week out, but it's still a massive disappointment. That feeling deep inside you with that performance at the weekend, it just, I think it's hard to accept that.
So as a model then, right, if you were to forget the revenue impact and forget all of that stuff and just say, right, let's put a plan together that we think is going to put us in the best position in 4 years' time, is that to experiment over the next two Six Nations?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. I think you've got to be, if your World Cup is the final piece of the jigsaw, you work back from there, and there are various stages at that. Obviously, 4 years is 48 months is a long time away, and the turnover of players will be big. But I think what has come out of this World Cup and the previous World Cup is that, from a planning or periodization point of view, you look at the minutes. I think, some of our players had going into it, but then my argument is blown out of the water. You look at England and you look at Wales, and they seem to be up to speed. So what's different with us? And I think, maybe from a rugby point of view, I think it had got to a stage where when real pressure came, and real pressure doesn't appear that often, it appears maybe once in 4 years at a World Cup, but the instinctive capacity of players on their inside, that stimulus wasn't able to be achieved. We couldn't get rugby out of people that were able to express themselves. Is that because we become so dependent on creating rucks, and a lot of the rugby is taken out of players?
What do you think?
But you can be sure that, to be fair, isn't how Joe Schmidt coaches either. Like, from my week spent on him, he creates a framework where it gives license for players to make the decisions, but maybe when you're in the environment so long, you take his option more so than maybe having a look at what other options are there.
Yeah. Like, because there was Brian O'Driscoll on this show, and he's in the Sewa afterwards, and Sky was talking about the brief influence that Stuart Lancaster would have had when he came into the Irish setup, and that he's obviously the unstructured chaos is his big thing. And Joe's is probably somewhat different to that, and that maybe Joe and maybe some of the players were looking at that and going, there's another way of doing this. And that maybe unsettled the ship slightly.
I would look upon it differently. I would look upon it, that's another strength. Because like that, if you have really good strike plays, but if you're really good non-structure play, that may, surely makes your game stronger, is how I would have seen it. But I think a lot of it too comes down to the players, Adrian. They have to take responsibility for their performance on the pitch. You know, I think what I think immediately needs to be addressed is at what stage do you get fluency in your performance? Do you get rhythm in your performance? Because from this World Cup, you could see with the Robbie Henshaw example of the ball sitting up for him and he couldn't actually place it down to score, unfortunately, you could see that autopilot or that capacity just to play in a free-flow state wasn't there within the players.
Do you need a fluency between what's going on in the provinces and the Irish team, or is that, because obviously people point at the Leinster example, or is that just too simple a solution or something that doesn't quite work?
Well, there is a big step up, obviously, from club rugby to test rugby, but I think you'd like to see probably a little bit more value coming back into the Munster Leinster games and full teams being played and players going at each other. I think Team Ireland was so prioritised for the last, whatever, 4 years that it was such a settled team too. I think you look at all the other nations, that kind of unpredictability about who would start, I think that you just have to have that at top level sport. And I think, you know, I mean, there will be, I would say, big changes for Six Nations. Big changes, because a lot of these players have been given their opportunity, but you have to say in the last 12 months that they haven't probably reached the levels they'd like to. So I would think change will be on the way.
Would you do that straight away, would you?
No, I don't think so. I think it's actually every position or name warrants a serious discussion, and the fact that, you know, for example, you know, I mean, you look at the number 10 position, Johnny is 34 now. It's, you know, I mean, he won't be at the next World Cup. So it depends what the short-term goal of the IRFU is and what's the medium-term goal and what is the long-term goal. But that will be become very obvious within, I would say, this Six Nations or after the Six Nations.
And is the right course of action to go for the long-term goal to install your Joey Carberry for next year's Six Nations, do you reckon?
I don't know, is the right or wrong, the language I would use on. I think what's really important is that, you know, I mean, if your World Cup is your focus, I think Stuart Lancaster actually gave a great presentation on the number of caps needed and the youth and experience. But I felt we had too many old legs in the team for this World Cup. I think it's really important you've experienced, but sprinkled with experience, you need massive youth and you need that enthusiasm and exuberance and that fearless performance. But I think at this stage in this cycle, for the Irish players, I think it became too predictable. It became very obvious who was carrying, where he was carrying, and that capacity to play the ball out of the tackle was something that we lacked greatly.
Just on that point that you make about getting back to basics in terms of provincial rivalry and actually just allowing Munster and Leinster to tear strips out of each other every so often, would you take that step, would you take that one step further and potentially allow a bit more freedom in terms of movement of players? Like, should Andy Farrell be considering calling Simon Zeebo up even if he stays at Racing?
I think the great thing from this World Cup is that everything is back on the table now. The old model hasn't worked at all. We're further away now, I feel, than we ever... Not when we ever were, but like there are usually in competitions, there's a lot of positives. You know what I mean? I think if you're calling this one honestly or accurately, what are the positives for Irish rugby after this World Cup? It's very hard to come up with a list, isn't it? And
that there were no injuries, somebody said to me flippantly. After last weekend.
The reason you don't need any injuries is because you're going deep into a competition. But we had a full deck to play from.
Exactly, yeah.
We had everything we worked for. But then, you know, and you know, obviously I'm an ex-player and I know exactly how these boys are feeling, because I was exactly this in 2007. That's the most horrible thing that can you experience in your career. But the big difference between 07 and 19 is that it's 12 years later. And you'd like to think lessons are, but I think everything needs to be put on the table because, as I said, if you always do what you always did, you're always going to get what you always got. So it isn't working. We need to change. We need to have a look, and you need to ask hard questions because to you know what I mean, the catchphrase, the Crusaders, what's best for the team? You get better or you get beaten. And we haven't got better.
One last one, just before we get on to get your predictions for the games this weekend. One of the solutions that people are reaching, obviously, for what could we have done differently here. One of the solutions that I thought was an interesting one was by Gordon Darcy during the week, talking about the Carberry move to Munster being the wrong one, that they should have been more imaginative. They should have looked at this dual playmaker role. Yes, it would have been at the expense of one of the older stagers, maybe Rob Kearney, if he'd have gone to 15. Is that something you think, in hindsight, might have worked?
No, I think Carberry's a 10. I think he's a great 10. I think we'll see that in the years that will come. You know, I think the argument then is that if Johnny went down in the first week of the Rugby World Cup, who'd play 10?
Ross Byrne.
So we didn't have backup experience really to him. I think Ross Byrne has a big future ahead of him, a really big future, but he's more a game manager. And he needs to play in that position, and he's getting that with Leinster, but there's still a long way to go in his development to be a test out half. But I think, the Johnny Carberry, both of them on the team, yes, I think it is a good idea, but maybe after 50 minutes. I think people underappreciate the importance of 15 and the position-specific criteria involved in playing that position. There's a lot more to it than just hanging out the back, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, look at her. There's plenty more to discuss on that, I'm sure, over the next few months. Anyway, the England-New Zealand game tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, 7-point spread, it seems, here in New Zealand's favour. This is going to be an absolute rip-roarer. Which way are you calling it?
I think New Zealand. I think their capacity to perform when the moment requires is superior to the other nations. I feel that I met a few of their players during the week, and I think they're humming. I think they're up for it. I think they realise how much of a threat England will be, a far greater threat than Ireland were. They got a little bit of a taste in the Northern Hemisphere at the weekend, but I think England will be obviously much stronger at set piece, and their defence will be stronger. So it makes for a great game. But I just think I was surprised they brought Ford back in.
Yeah.
Genuinely was. I thought that was the team for a World Cup, potential winning team that England picked against Australia. So, but you're beginning to see snippets of Mwanga. I think he has another gear or two in him, which is scary. And the typhoon is live here at the minute, a very mild one compared to the previous one. It's a desperate day, but the forecast is for it to pass on a dry day and dry conditions. And I don't even think a wet ball would interfere with New Zealand's capacity to handle it. So at the minute, they seem hot to me, too hot to handle.
Yeah, and we already spoke about maybe Wales have no right even to be this far along. Is that a clear South Africa call for you, or is there a game in that?
No, it isn't, because of how poorly Wales were at the weekend. And in fairness to Wales, they don't back up poor performances. So I think they, in a strange way, semi-final, the handbrake is off. I think they'll go for it more than you'd expect them. And they will be dangerous. South Africa, obviously, Colby is just such a dangerous weapon in the wide channels. He would be a big loss. But I think it'll be closer than people expect, I think.
Yeah, all right, we're looking for it.
I think South Africa will win, but I would say it'll go down to the death.
Yeah, I think for all our sanity, New Zealand and South Africa wins will be exactly what's required this weekend. Enjoy the games. Thanks a million.
Yeah, cheers, lads. Good to chat.
Thanks, Ronan Agar. On the line there from Japan, plenty of comments coming in. I'm really not up for seeing England. I actually wouldn't mind so much. I'm really not up for seeing Wales getting into a final.
You and Ger should start an anti-Welsh podcast, Slaying the Dragon.
They're just too much.
I've got no issue with them, to be quite honest. I think they're actually, having seen them up close and personal, I think they're actually grand, the Welsh support.
Oh, God. Martin Fitzpatrick says, what went wrong? Where do we go from here? I mean, if we could answer either of those questions, Martin, I don't know what we'd be doing, but making some money from it. Paul Quirk says, should more players be allowed to play in other countries to help inherit that mindset from others?
You do realise that was obviously a callback.
Huh?
That was obviously a joke. That was Rich Starr Cooper. What happened? Where do we go from here?
Fair enough. That went over my head, Martin. I've done you a disservice there and I apologise profusely for it. Paul Quirk wondering if we should send more players abroad, that they'd pick up other ideas from other cultures and viewpoints that were too insular. Like, I don't think a policy where you're sending players abroad is going to be of ultimate benefit to Irish rugby.
I don't think he means a policy, that texter. I think what he means is actually just opening our doors and letting a bit more free movement.
That would certainly be part of a policy, allowing free movement at that point where
you're not sending them, like you're
no, but you're at that point saying, well, we're not going to, like, obviously our player management system is seen as one of the best in the world now. Maybe you look at that through the lens of the World Cup and think, Jesus, there's something wrong. But I think it's a pretty good system in terms of player welfare. I think that having a situation where, like, if you are opening the door to say to players, well, you can go and play abroad, then you're going to have to accept that a lot of your top players are going to do exactly that.
Yeah, they certainly will. In terms of logistics, like, as long as they stay in Europe, it's fine. But it's player welfare that's the killer. Playing in the Premiership or the top 14, which is going to batter them. But, like, ultimately, the biggest battering will be taken when it comes to the Six Nations. And ultimately, if you want to park the Six Nations as this unimportant thing from now on, then that doesn't really matter. Whereas we see that most of the top players are good to go for the World Cup from those two leagues because they've had months to recover.
Yeah. All right. So who are you shouting for this weekend? Wales, obviously.
Wales. Wales beat Springboks. I'm not a big Springbok fan. Wales to win that game. Wouldn't mind seeing Wales win the World Cup at this point, to be quite honest with you. And I've got no shame in saying it. I want to see New Zealand smash England, and then I want to see a New Zealand Wales final, and Gatland to do one in his home country.
What's your problem with South Africa?
No problem with them whatsoever. Just a purely rugby based one.
8:27 on this Friday morning. You're welcome along to OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. Delighted to have you with us. Plenty of comments coming in. Do keep them coming. We're going to hear from Alan Quinlan in just a few minutes' time. We're also going to talk to Phil Thompson out of the weekend's Premier League action. So that's where we're at on this Friday morning. Alan Quinlan, as I said, with us next. But first of all, before that, we've got an exclusive interview with Eddie Jones, the England head coach, ahead of the Rugby World Cup semi-finals this weekend. Take a look.
Eddie, you seem pretty happy with the way preparations are going for this massive game against New Zealand. Are you really as relaxed as you're making out?
Well, mate, my default expression is this smug grin, which I know is really irritating for most people, and that's what's making me happy at the moment, and that and pissing Kiwis off.
Will the game plan be quite different to the one you implemented against Australia?
Mate, the game plan is to win the game of rugby by playing to our strengths. So it's a combination of arrogance and brutality, mate.
Of course, you dropped George Ford against Australia. Why not the same again for New Zealand?
No, I didn't drop him, mate. I just removed him from the team.
Sorry, how is it not the same thing, Eddie?
Well, you tell me, mate.
No, I would say it's not the same thing.
Well, there you go, mate. That's just another excuse for me to look smug again after saying something nonsensical.
Eddie, how good are New Zealand?
How long is a piece of string, mate? You guys just don't get it, do you? Regardless of what question you ask me, I'm going to make it like it's a stupid question. It's part and parcel. It's a key component in what makes me a pain in the ass.
Eddie, what are you expecting from New Zealand?
Oh, I'm expecting them to wear black and do the haka. What are you expecting, mate?
Eddie, what have you made of Steve Henson's reign as New Zealand head coach?
No, I couldn't give a toss about him or New Zealand, mate. Main thing is for me to keep this ridiculous expression on my face and piss off Steve and the All Blacks as much as possible. How can that fail?
Christ, we're absolutely fucked.
Richard's Rugger thing.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Richard Cooper, the brilliant Richard Cooper on, I think you'll agree, with his Eddie Jones impression there. It was a little tuft of hair on the top of the head was amongst the highlights for me from that. Right.
Yeah, it's... I'm not sure whether to take it as more of a compliment that he could morph into us physically, because, of course, one guy who didn't morph into physically was Alan Quinlan. Might have done himself...
I wonder, has he seen it, though?
But that's the thing. That's the big question. There was just a picture of Quinlan up, so he could nail the voice, but not the looks.
Well, have you seen it?
Have I seen it? Yeah, I have, yeah. Good morning, lads. How are you?
Good. Well...
What I want to ask Owen is what happened and where do we go from here?
That is the big question. It's the big question.
That is the big question. Can you answer that for me, Owen?
Well, you know, it's... What was my line again? Yeah, or something.
What happened and where do we go from here?
I don't even know. It was a huge defeat anyway, is all I know.
He's good, isn't he?
Right, okay. Very good, yeah. I've been playing him to a lot of Irish fans out here for the last 2 weeks, playing all the... My favourite is George Hook, Eddie O'Sullivan. I'm not sure he nails me there. I don't know. I'll let other people judge that.
It's huge.
Huge, absolutely huge.
Right, give us the weather update to begin with, because I've been looking at a couple of dispatches and some other channels this morning. It seems like it's pretty manky over there.
It is, yeah. I was listening to Rog there. He's a couple of miles away from me here, and it's raining where he is, and it's raining where I am. It hasn't stopped all day. It's torrential rain. And so I know we give out about the rain at home sometimes, but this is taking the biscuit, to be honest. But it's supposed to be dry off tomorrow. And,
okay.
Hopefully it'll be better for both games of the weekend.
All right, we're looking here. We'll get into those in a second. I think we had you on early in the week, but just there's a few little... pieces in relation to the Irish stuff that I want to get your thoughts on before we get into that. And one of them primarily being in relation to Stuart Lancaster and some, I suppose, creative tension that might have, it's being suggested, has cropped up. Brian O'Driscoll was talking about it on this show earlier in the week, that he had been obviously in the Ireland camp at some point and was obviously is a different way of playing the game, right? Like the unstructured chaos versus Schmidt's fairly structured, like set-piece rugby to a degree, and that Schmidt was looking at that and kind of thinking, this is not something that... This is not a way that I want our team to play. Do you see merit in those comments?
Yeah, well, look, I saw the piece in the Seawa stuff as well, where he was speaking about the Leinster players changing things up and going back to the way Leinster play and being with Ireland then and it being different and more structured and stuff like that. I think it's... The thing about this is if Joe Schmidt came back and coached any team, the question you'd have to ask is would he still try and keep the same kind of game plan and structure that he had with Ireland that worked so well for a number of years? It worked so well for Leinster, it worked so well for Ireland. I think the biggest surprise in the last year is someone so diligent as Joe didn't change or didn't see the possibility around change and maybe it was too late to change from what they know and what brought them success. And I suppose it's easy looking on from the outside, looking in, but people can only talk about what they see. And it's something that's been spoken about by many pundits in the last 7 or 8 months. I remember after the Six Nations sitting down with Andy Dunn and I wasn't defensive, but I thought I probably didn't see it as clearly as a fly half does, you know what I mean? Because they're kind of in that pivotal attacking position all the time. And I've always said this, if Ireland's pack had performed at a level in 2018, they'd probably be a match for most teams. When that doesn't happen, it's very difficult then to implement off-the-cuff attack because people are alien to it and they're not used to it. And that's probably the difference. And so... The comments from Stuart Lancaster, Brian O'Driscoll, and Siwa, well, they're all attack-minded players, and Stuart obviously is a coach, and he's done a brilliant job with Leinster, and there's probably a lot of truth in what they're saying.
How fundamental this whole thing is, because we've just been discussing, like, Andy Farrell is straight into a job now, like Owen is saying, he needs to be at the Munster Ospreys game this weekend. Like, he's straight into it. There's no great positivity to come with that, obviously, in the back of what's happened. But how fundamental is the job that he has ahead of him now over the next whatever number of years?
Well, it's there's a bit of baggage going with it now, you know, because I think I heard Rog speaking about the previous World Cups. I was involved in 99 or 03 or 07. I was a pundit in 2011 in New Zealand, and I think the magnitude of not making a semi-final has grown and grown and grown. I think 2015 was, I think there was mitigating factors there around the injuries against Argentina. But this one just seems like it's multiplied the pressure and the negativity after it. And I suppose they're the best prepared team. They had a lot of time to prepare for this. The writing was probably on the wall after the Six Nations that some change needed. And so we mentioned the word change a lot, and Andy Farrell has to implement change. I think we have to find a way of doing things a little bit different. If you have a dominant pack of forwards, Adrian, it's very easy to be on the front foot and create quick ball and pressurise and dominate teams. And it's so much easier then for your attacking players to, they don't have to oversimplify things or complicate things. They can just play what's in front of them. There's a lot of space there. And if that doesn't happen, then you have to find some sort of threat to and try and find expose the opposition a little bit with some width in your game. And I just think Andy Farrell has to find a way now and say, right, look back at what's said, and I'm sure there will be a review what's happened. And then Mike Catt is coming in as attack coach, so he's now got to reprogram some of these guys to say, well, you don't completely go away from every team needs the type of direct confrontational style, but it's having something else in the attack when you need it, and adding that on after your set piece has been good and you know your physicality is good and you can dominate your opposite player. But I think the key now is to try and unleash the players a little bit, bring in some new blood, and I think it'd be quite difficult if you kept the core group of players exactly as the same and you picked the same team for the first game against Scotland. Would it work, and would it be risky, and would they make mistakes? Probably. I think you've got to bring in some new players within the squad itself. Mm. Conway, Larmour, maybe Chris Farrell, and make that change a gradual process, because you can't just completely change one way to the other, because obviously if the weather is terrible, if you're playing in conditions like the rain today, you can't just throw the ball around. You've got to be more direct and have good game management. Ireland's game management, and part of the problem of what happened since January is our kicking game has been really poor. So that was something that was a real strength. So there's kind of multiple facets to what needs to happen and change. And it's really adding more attack shape to the team and more of an attack mindset, if you like.
One thing that I was thinking about over the last few days, and I'm no fan of Eddie Jones, I have to say, and his methods, but actually looking at him, even over the last 24, 48 hours, the press conference he's given, like he's a guy that you want almost on your side. He's a guy that's like released that pressure valve now for the England players. Like that's something you've mentioned there, that the more this goes, another 4 years, like suddenly we're like, Jesus, imagine the amount of pressure that's going to be under 23 if we get to a 2023 Rugby World Cup quarterfinal against whoever, the amount of pressure that's going to be on those players. Having somebody like him, a personality like him, that Ferguson style to undo that pressure valve might be kind of, I don't know Andy Farrell is necessarily that guy, by the way, but a role like that, when you talk about how multifaceted it might be to allow us to progress to that stage, that type of a character probably was something that Ireland might benefit from.
Yeah, well, look, I think Andy Farrell is very popular with the players, and he's a bit of an old school approach. He's a guy who captained Great Britain as a 17-year-old, so he's a hard nut, and he can inspire people. So he's got to inspire the Irish players now to get back up and go again and deal with the negativity and the pressure that's going to be there, that the pressure that's going to ultimately build for the next couple of years. You can't just go out and abandon trying to win games for the sake of change. I think there has to be some risk scenario there with selections, and there has to be, I think if there's 50-50 calls going forward with more of an attack minded player as opposed to a more direct player. I think you need to go with the attack minded player going forward, because we have to learn from this, and we have to have more strands to the game plan. And ultimately, you learn from your defeats. And I think if Joe was back coaching the team in January, I think he would start to implement change. And I think he brought a lot of players through after the 2015 World Cup. So the pressure point, that the pressure they have to deal with. And look, make no bones about this, Adrian. If England lose to New Zealand tomorrow, the pressure will ramp up on Eddie Jones. And Steve Hansen said it during the week. It's absolute nonsense that they're not under any pressure. This English team, and you talk about preparation and finances and money being pumped into a team. England are the wealthiest rugby nation in the world, and they have left no stone unturned as regards the resources they've given the group. If they don't get to a World Cup final, it'll be seen as a disaster. So I think he's deflecting a bit of pressure, but in a sense, when you're one of the players in that group, I think, and that's the big question mark about Andy Farrell. He's got to deal with that now going forward and be quite open about how they're dealing with it as well, because you can't just hide away from the fact that this negativity is going to stay with the group for a long time. But look, things move on, and you know, if they have a positive Six Nations and then they go to Australia in the summer and we see a raft of new players getting opportunities, maybe from the under-20s last year and this year, people get pretty optimistic again. And it's a long way away, 4 years, and there'll be a lot of talk about that. But hopefully, you know, you think it's in some sense, it's too far away to be focusing the minds too much on it now. But I think it'll just keep cropping up over the next couple of years. And that expectation pressure is going to be even more so than now. I think winning all the success in 2018 brought more expectation. And it added more pressure. So the pressure of never being in a semi-final was always there. But I think the excitement of, there's a lot of Irish people after coming in here for the weekend for semi-finals and finals. They all booked last year when Ireland beat New Zealand in Dublin. So I think everybody kind of got caught up in that excitement around what this team could do. And we got so many warning signs during the year, and ultimately they came up very short.
Like, another element here, Alan, is that we've been showing up skills-wise at times in this World Cup, obviously against the All Blacks, but there was an argument that was the case against Japan. And the more I think about it, the more I think that there's, if we want success at the next World Cup, specifically the next World Cup, that opening the doors to Simon Zebo or the likes of them to come back, not necessarily Zebo, there's nothing to do with him, but players who are abroad to come back, just as the way to go. Now, I'm saying that if that's what we want from World Cup success, I'm saying that the cost is that you will suddenly have players dropping like flies around November internationals, around Six Nations, because the Premiership or the top 14 season is so intense. But where are those Premiership and top 14 players now? They're doing pretty well at the Rugby World Cup. Where would the Irish players be now if they were playing at the top teams in the Premiership or the top 14? Like, Simon Zebo's probably improved by playing rugby in France. He hasn't had a straitjacket on him like the IRFU tends to put on some of the coaches and some of the players in the country, because with that control that Joe Schmidt succeeded with, he needed control over all the provinces. I just think if we really are going to finally make this decision that the Rugby World Cup is where Ireland needs to succeed, then opening those doors right back up has to be one of those options.
It's a double-edged sword. You make a very good point about having, if there was a number of four or five Irish guys playing abroad and they're in different environments, you're getting different ideas, you're playing with sometimes incredibly talented guys. If you had, you know, Zebo and playing with Racing, there's some South Sea Islanders there. Fakatawa, who played for France last week, who was brilliant at 13. You know, ideas and things that he does, he could bring back that and share with people. And just, I suppose it's, and if there was guys playing the Premiership, the same. It's been exposed to different coaches and different ideas. But it's like Ronan O'Gara going coaching. He's seen loads of different ways of doing things, and you learn along the way. So there would be benefit in that, but I think the problem is, and I genuinely agree with the fact that if you open the doors to start selecting people overseas, you're gonna have a lot of players go, and it may affect the game here. Who knows? Maybe it's something that has to happen now. I don't know, but I don't think we at the moment I think we shouldn't pick players who are overseas, because it's going to open the doors, and a lot of people could end up going because of the money and the financial reward, particularly in France. But it's something that could happen. And again, there's going to be so many debates about what we're doing right and wrong. You know, the last couple of years with Leinster winning European Cups and getting to a final again this year, and the success in 18, everything was perfect. Everything was great. We had the best coach in the world. And look, I know you got to dissect everything and go through all these possibilities, but I wouldn't make any kind of rash decisions. I think the excitement for me is, I've looked at a lot of the under-20s from last year and this year. There's some really, really quality, top-quality players in that group. And the quicker we can get some of those guys into the group, and when we go to the next World Cup, have our age profile much lower, have our average age 26, 27, not up towards 30, you know. So yeah. I think that's it. And you know, you've just got to keep dealing with this.
First of the semi-finals, obviously, tomorrow morning. It was interested to read Clive Woodward's comments this morning on George Ford's re-selection back at 10, saying that he was positive about a 10. This is a horses for courses selection. Rog was on earlier saying something slightly different to that. What's your take on this? It seems like he's wide open for that All Blacks back row to get stuck into tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well, the All Blacks back row have to get at him first, and I think the way Curry and Underhill and have played, I think they'll be crucial in trying to protect him a little bit. His defence has improved. He's a brilliant, skillful player who attacks the game line really well, and his distribution is superb. So my indication from the selection is that England are going to actually not try and do what they did against Australia. I know they scored some really good tries, but they tried to physically batter Australia last week.
Yeah.
They're actually going to try and play rugby through Ford tomorrow.
Kicking game?
Could be. Yeah, they're going to, of course they're going to kick. And their kicking game has been really top notch. I think they played France, I think, in the Six Nations. They kicked the ball 44 times. Some of those kicks were kick passes and little dinks in over the top. Grubbers up the touchline. They found a lot of open space, and I remember coming out of Twickenham that day saying, not one English fan was complaining about the amount of kicks. It was a huge number when you're up in the 40s, and they scored seven or eight tries that day. So that those kind of kicks will be very important. But again, it's about possession and not giving away possession to New Zealand. And we did that so badly last week. Our kicks were far too deep. The box kicks from Conor Murray, the accuracy in some of the kicks from Johnny Sexton have been well documented. So the kicking game is a really important part of unsettling New Zealand. But I think England have got to play as well, because if you're trying to contain them and stop them and slow them down, it's a very, very dangerous scenario, because they can generate slow ball into really quick ball as well.
Yeah. All right. Just quickly before we let you go, Quinny, if you will, give us your prediction for that and the second semi on Sunday.
It's only a gut feeling, Adrian. I think that game is going to be quite close, and on form, New Zealand, I think the bookies have them 10 points, maybe 8 or 10 points winning that game. I have a feeling that this England group are very, very mentally well prepared, and I think there's a lot of top-class players in that group, and I think they will physically match New Zealand. I think they may cause a bit of a surprise tomorrow.
Right.
I think South Africa, given on what we've seen from Wales last week, and Liam Williams is a huge loss. I think he would have been really crucial. I know Halfpenny's a good player, but Liam Williams is brilliant in the air. I think South Africa will probably just edge that one.
So to be absolutely clear, you're calling England?
England, South Africa final.
Wow.
Big call. Nobody else calling England.
Big call. No, I haven't heard many. Many who aren't. I haven't heard many who aren't English.
What about your friend beside you there?
What the Oracle.
Where did we go from here?
they're the sort of questions we'll be asking about England and Wales on Monday morning. Quinny, brilliant stuff as always. Good man. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, lads. Good luck.
Cheers. Alan Quinlan on the line there from Japan. He had you there, to be fair.
Just one thing on the opening the doors thing. Are we in a better position than Wales as a rugby nation?
It all comes back to the World Cup, and then you have to say no. Is that what you mean?
And then let's open the doors. It's as simple as that. Their provincial system is in is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. Every year we smugly walk up to the Pro 14, the Champions Cup, and say we are better than you, Welsh rugby. But if we're using the metric of the World Cup, and quite often the Six Nations, it's like actually they're on a par, but when it comes to the World Cup, better than us. So if that's the metric, if we're serious about the World Cup becoming the most important thing to Irish rugby, then we can't keep people in this country because it is counterproductive.
Hang on one second. Right. Wales should be out of the World Cup is the reality. Now, they have absolutely fluked their way into it, right? And I know that they're there, and so it papers over everything. But in my view, it is a papering over everything because you can't say that the structures in Wales are so wildly wrong, but they just happen to be getting these results, so we should copy that.
What about 2011?
They should be. Look, track record at World Cups is infinitely better than ours, is inarguable. They should be out of this World Cup. There's zero question about that. The ball was ripped on. That was ripped out was a knock on last weekend. Your man obviously shouldn't have got sent off. So anyway, that notwithstanding, I don't know that I'd be trying to copy Wales' systems. I have to say, like, I think that actually our structures are pretty good. Like, we would ideally be having an altogether different conversation this week if 12 months ago we had have realised that actually we've hit our peak. And we need to do something different rather than, geez, this is great, we've hit our peak, let's continue to do the same thing, will be my view. Whether that dictates you should change everything in terms of your structures as a business, I wouldn't be convinced.
The ability to change to a different model comes from different people from different backgrounds who have experienced different rugby cultures.
I think that comes from the coach. That would have come from the coach or coaches if he was open to listening to them, will be my view.
It's come across to me that we've been found wanting when it comes to execution skills in this World Cup.
But then
I think the Japan argument is a bit over the top.
Does that not even then come back to David Nusafour, for example? Is he not the one within the RFU who needs to be identifying that and coming out? And is there some shortcoming in that regard rather than it being the structure's fault? Like, the structures to me seem like pretty good.
But the point is that they've become so straitjacketed in their approach that has their ability to play off the cuff just completely deserted them. Because everything they do on a day-to-day basis is so Ireland-focused.
I would agree on that, but my view is that that's not to do with the structures as opposed to the coaching.
I disagree. I think it's a bit of both. I think Josh Bitt obviously has to take a huge amount of criticism for what happened over the last couple of weeks, but there's obviously something a bit deeper at play here. It's not just a coach who had a one-dimensional system. Granted, that is a huge part of it.
Because they devolved so much responsibility to him, and maybe that's a failing from the RFU's point of view, but like they had devolved so much responsibility to him about player welfare, player management, and it was all, what do you want? Let's do it. Like, too much, which
that was an error.
But you don't also say that that's not some shortcoming in the RFU's part either. That was their decision at that time.
There's plenty of blame to go around. I'm not pointing the finger at one person, but I think that was a bit of an error, giving Schmidt that amount of control.
8:52 on this Friday morning. It's OTBAM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. Phil Thompson joining us shortly. Talk football on OTBAM up next. Phil Egan in studio for the sports news. We're going to leave the rugby on this. It's Brian O'Driscoll on Wednesday Night Rugby on who's going to be the next Irish rugby captain.
I think he's one of the obvious candidates, for sure. He's clearly got the respect of the whole squad. He has very quickly become a mainstay, a focal point of the pack. You know, arguably one of Ireland's best players, probably in the top three most consistent performers over the last year or 18 months, even during this World Cup. You know, his numbers are still pretty impressive, even though he's on a losing side, which is unusual to him as well, and a disappointed outcome with this World Cup. He still showed what his potential is, and I think you could do a hell of a lot worse than making him captain and giving him that wealth of experience for a couple of years in advance of going into a World Cup in 4 years' time. He's going to be around for a long time. The way he plays the game, it would worry me a little bit as to what sort of longevity he can get. You know, you can't play the confrontational game he plays for 10 or 12 years at that level. He'll just get beaten up. So he's going to have to learn to modify it, and maybe a new game plan will allow him to do that. But he would definitely be someone in the conversation and at the top of the conversation. If Johnny Sexton is going to play for another couple of years, he obviously captained Ireland for the first time in the Samoa match, and he's passionate about captaining Ireland again. And maybe, you know, you give it to him for a year while James continues to find his feet internationally.
It was James Ryan all along. James Ryan should be the next Irish rugby captain, according to Brian Driscoll. the league, and good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are you doing?
Europa League, the big story this morning, of course.
Yeah, well, there was a night of comebacks and drama, and also Manchester United finally got an away win, their first since March when they beat PSG in the Champions League. But last night, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side beat Partizan Belgrade 1-0 in Serbia. They did it without having a shot on target from play. The goal was a penalty from Anthony Martial in the first half after 19-year-old Brandon Williams was brought down. And Solskjaer actually name-checked Williams. He thought he was the man of the match. So Nicola Pepe came off the bench, scored two free kicks in Arsenal's 3-2 win at home to Vitória. They were 2-1 down with 10 minutes to go. The second of those free kicks came in injury time. So Arsenal are top of their group with 3 wins from 3. Celtic also top of Group E after a 2-1 win at home to Lazio. A late header from Christopher Julien has Neil Lennon's side top of the group. Wolves also won 2-1. They were away to Slovan Bratislava, and like Celtic, they had to come from behind. Wolves scored twice in the space of 5 second-half minutes. Roman Saiz and a penalty from Raul Jimenez. They did have Diogo Jota sent off late on, and Steven Gerrard's Rangers drew 1-1 away to Porto. Tonight in the SSE or Tricity League Premier Division, we've got the final round of games. Dundalk will get the trophy. They host the St. Pat's, who still have a slim chance of finishing fourth. They would have to win at Oriel Park and hope Derry City lose at home to Finn Harps. A draw enough for Derry to secure fourth place in European football for next season. Shamrock Rovers play Cork City. It's Waterford against UCD. Bohemians take on Sligo Rovers at Dalymount Park. Tonight will be Bows captain Derek Pender's final game in a Bows jersey. He's retiring after tonight. It's 1-1 between Drogheda United and Cabinteely ahead of the second leg of their first division playoff at United Park. All those games kick off at 7:45. The winner of that playoff will play Finn Harps for a place in the top flight next season. At 8 o'clock, Southampton play Leicester at St Mary's in the Premier League. Leicester could go up to second if they win. They'd go ahead of Manchester City, who obviously play tomorrow. Lee Halfpenny and Jonathan Davis have both been named in the Wales team for Sunday's semi-final against South Africa at the World Cup. Halfpenny comes in for Liam Williams, who's obviously out with an ankle injury. The other change then, Ross Moriarty comes into the back row in place of the injured Josh Navidi. In the Pro 14 tonight, Munster play the Ospreys, Ulster face the Cardiff Blues, both games at 7:35. And Ireland's cricketers are taking on Jersey at the moment. It's a must-win T20 World Cup qualifier in Abu Dhabi. So Ireland won the toss, put Jersey into bat first. Jersey have set Ireland a target of 105 to get the win.
I nearly replied to that on my own, Phil.
Well, I don't know if you saw the Canada match, but Ireland completely collapsed against Canada.
I'm just saying.
You don't think Jersey...
I'm not having it.
No?
No. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Phil Egan, you're going to be back to us, I think, soon, are you?
Yeah, we're doing something soon, aren't we?
We'll be doing something soon. Let's say no more about it than that.
Okay.
Just tease it along nicely. Thanks a million. Let's get back to our roadshow at the Crane Lane Theatre in Cork with Heineken Rugby Club. We were treated to an hour on stage with father and son, John and David Moyler. Here's David and his father acting as his agent.
I didn't want to leave. I genuinely didn't want to leave because I was thinking, I'm living at home with my mum and dad. I'm 17. I was like, oh, they're offering me crazy money. I was like, I'm staying. And then he was like, no, you're going. You're going, you're gone. So I went to Sunderland. I'll never forget. I went in to sign my first professional contract. So they put the offer on the table. And my dad was like, yeah, we'll have a chat about it and we'll come back to you. So my dad, I said, Dad, this isn't what Cork City are offering me or whatever. And he says, no. He says, I'll negotiate with them. Now you've got a man now who's like, knows nothing about being an agent. And so they come back in. I'll never forget it. They come back in and he said, yeah, this is the offer, yeah. Maybe we add on 500 extra. And they went, no. And he went, grant, David, sign. It wasn't much. And he went, there you go, away you go. And I'll never forget it. He flew over. I think I went over on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Went back on following morning.
He went back and that was it. He said, this is it.
And what did I shove under the door?
He shoved the note. We'd had like little points on it of what to do. And he said, you're not allowed home. So he said to me.
I said to him, I remember saying to him, and I was absolutely 100% serious, there is no coming home.
Yeah, there's no home for you. That's what he said. Now, my mum is obviously lovely and my mum would have accepted me home.
Wow. That was, I have to say, amongst the highlight of that show during the week at Crane Lane was the conversation between David Myler and his dad. Like, you can't come home, son. make success of this. We don't want to see you.
Yeah, obviously found out pretty early that David would respond well to Tough Love.
Oof, bloody hell. He did give some information about his own relationship with his own dad, who never said very much to him by way of encouragement. Said to John's cousin, John's father said to John's cousin on his deathbed that tell him I was proud of him. That was it.
Mm. Very, very Irish sort of fatherson relationship,
like,
isn't it?
In 2019 Ireland, we mollycoddle our kids too much, but I do think that is probably on the opposite extreme. A bit too much.
Probably is, yeah. I think so. Times have changed.
But yeah, for the better. Right, 9 o'clock, OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. Pretty interesting weekend of football. Delighted to say that Phil Thompson joins us on the line. Morning to you, Phil.
Hi, guys. You all right?
Flying the thanks.
Yeah, there's a good story there by David.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I wish I'd have had his dad as my negotiator when I was... We didn't have much say in ours, by the way.
Really?
I remember Bob Paisley, Bill Shankly, just used to say, there's a contract, we're giving you another couple hundred pound a week. And you looked and you went, thanks. And that was it. You just walked out. No agents, no da, no mom, nothing. You just accepted what they said.
And no matter
which
who,
was not bad.
No matter who you were, you weren't in a position to say, here, listen, add on an extra zero there.
No. I think even when Kenny Dalglish came down, I think he came down with his father-in-law who helped him, but I don't think Pat would have done him any good.
The story there, he goes in and says, oh, we need to get a bit extra out of this, and the dad goes in and says, right, another 500, and the club said, no, we're not having it. And he says, grand, let's sign.
It's brilliant. Incredible. Really good, really good. Not allowing him home. Oh, my goodness. Oof. That was a bit harsh.
That's very tough love. And he didn't seem all that apologetic about it either. It's definitely something we're going to revisit again, I can assure you that. Liverpool Spurs this weekend, Phil, half four, Anfield Sunday. You were on with us last week and you told us that no United player gets in that Liverpool team. How did Liverpool come a cropper against such a bang average team?
Well, as I told you last week and I told everybody, this is Manchester United's biggest game by a million miles. And it's the game at Old Trafford, which means so much more. And I said to you, Rashford would turn up. The others would. It's the best game Fred's played, Pereira's played, he's played, Rojo's played. They all roll the sleeves up. Now it's what they do this week and the week after. And that was what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should have said when he was saying about Rashford, how good was he? He's played their best game for the... it's probably his best game all season. He should be asking why. Why? And it's just because it's Liverpool come to town. Roles are reversed from your Beckham, Giggs, Keane's goals. And you have to be given more every week and to other players. And that's why they're in the position that they are. And our sort of attitude for the game wasn't quite right. We were bullied at times off the ball. And you could see that. Didn't surprise me one bit, because as I say, the roles are reversed now. Liverpool were their massive favourites. Man United fans were watching between the fingers. And we were like that years ago. And we always rose our game. But the thing was, Manchester United were always able to beat us. But it was, that was their very best, the maximum that they could play. And we never got out of first gear. And that shows the massive difference between the two clubs at the moment.
Yeah, like, interesting to hear you talk about that, because, like, there are absolute shades of the... Ferguson used to say it regularly, that all the other teams in the Premier League, when they came to Old Trafford or when they were playing United, used to raise their game to a certain level. But generally,
absolutely,
some of those players that you mentioned, they would respond, Phil, right? Like, they would grind the rules out, the wins out week in, week out. And you've mentioned maybe the attitude was slightly wrong. That will concern Liverpool fans, I'm sure, this morning.
Yeah, it will be. And it happens in games... But it was such a momentous game, to be quite right. And you've seen it. You're sloppy with your passing. You're sloppy with your challenges in that early part. And yeah, we come to town in the last 15 or 20 minutes. But that should be, it should be better than that. As we've shown in other games, we could get through them and we could win them. This was a huge game. And we were not at it. And that's what I would really put about it. And it disappointed me in a way, because I wanted to see some of the challenges that later on that sort of David, that James got put in on them. I would like to have seen them a little bit earlier in the game. You know, maybe James Milner being on there, who'd have rattled a couple. But it wasn't. You get these games and you get this you know, the change in the attitudes. But this was a massive game for us, and I would have liked us to have been at it from the start.
Does it suggest, like, obviously the one major absentee on the day, does it suggest that Liverpool are utterly reliant on Mo Salah to be title contenders, and without him, they're not?
No, not particular, because I look at the game in midweek, and probably Mo hadn't played for 3 weeks, and you could see that against Genk in midweek, and it took him a long, long time before he got into the game. He wasn't sort of that game-changer on Wednesday night that he should be. So it's not really down to just missing Mo. I just think it was a whole team, a whole squad. I must admit, I thought against United, when the Keita came on, Oxlade Chamberlain came on, Lallana came on, there was a little bit more impetus. Maybe it was Manchester United retiring, but they, certainly Keita and Oxlade Chamberlain in midweek were absolutely terrific. And they'll give food for thought for Jurgen Klopp in his team selection for Sunday.
I think it could be more than that, Phil. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain could be in with a situation of becoming the most effective midfielder that Liverpool have. I'm not sure what you think his ceiling is.
Yeah, listen, scoring two goals doesn't make it that everything is absolutely perfect. I will say that he had a very good game. That's why I'm saying those options. But a fit, fully fit and firing Oxlade-Chamberlain is a massive advantage to any team. As we've seen before, he had that dreadful injury that's curtailed his season. You know, and he's worked very, very hard. And it takes a while to get back to your best. When he's at his best, that is a proper player. And I was absolutely delighted for him. Injuries are a terrible thing. But fair play to him. He had a great game.
We mentioned Salah just a little bit earlier on. How do you explain his form this season? Or how do you evaluate it? I feel like his numbers are pretty good. He's 7 goals, 4 assists. But either, I don't know, he's not hitting the straps in the same way that he had been in previous seasons, or we're nearly expecting too much.
Even last season, because the season before, when he absolutely thrilled us all and he was banging, he was just plain Mo. Now he's special Mo, and everybody's giving him even more attention. You see now he wriggled free on Wednesday night. There must have been about 4 players surrounding him, and they're paying him extra attention, and he has to deal with that, and he has to come through. His performances, as you say, his stats have still been very, very good, and that's why the three of them together. And I think you say about Salah, Mane, Firmino is the one. Some of the things he done the other night were truly exceptional. He's the one that makes these two boys tick. If he's having an off day, sometimes it's the other two who don't play as well.
Yeah. What about this game then this weekend? Tottenham, obviously, I mean, they were certainly at a low ebb a week ago. Reading Mark Lawrence, and he still thinks that Spurs are going to get something out of this game, that maybe they've sort of turned a corner a little bit. It does feel like almost a make-or-break moment for Tottenham.
For me, it's not make-or-break. This is still a good team, but I think there's splits in the camp. When you look, and it's been well documented, the players who are coming out of contract and how you can let your star players, 3 star players, run the contracts down is unforgivable. Mm. As Spurs fans, you'd be wanting to know what the hell. So I think there has been. So I wouldn't just on one game, a star by 5, that's going to make it all right. I think Spurs fans will want to see a little bit more consistency from them. Because they've not. I done the game against Watford last week at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and for 45 minutes it was absolutely dreadful. They just couldn't get in. It just couldn't get themselves going. And he's changed. And he changed it again in midweek. And I think that's where it tells me that Poch still really doesn't know his best start lineup. And I think that's a bit worried. So he's still searching for it. But listen, this is going to be a massive game. As Manchester United turned up last week, you can bet your life Spurs will turn up at Anfield.
What's going to happen?
I think Liverpool will win. I think we enjoy the bigger teams when they come, and I can see Liverpool. I'm going for a 2-0 win.
2-0 win. Right, we shall see. Phil, thanks a million.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend.
On the line there, looking ahead to the weekend, the big game really this weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Liverpool are going to win at the weekend as well. I don't think it was good to see from, if you're a Spurs fan, which I'm not, to see kind of glimpses of hope or a bit of light at the end of the tunnel in midweek. But I do think it's just a glimpse. Like, it's interesting. I mean, with Alderweireld and Eriksen not on the team, how much better they looked at certain times, but then again they came up against an opposition that weren't very good at all, and that's going to be the exact opposite this weekend. Spurs aren't back just yet. I hope for Pochettino's sake they are back, because you'd like to see him succeed, but it's going to be either or at this stage. Is it going to be Pochettino, or is it going to be the players, or is that actually just a cliche way of looking at this, and is there actually a possibility where they can all coexist happily and actually Levy changes his ways and Pochettino's got the players' backs and all of this?
Yeah. Like, we do tend to get carried away with hyperbole when it comes to sport, right? But like, it does feel as well as if it is a bit of a pivot moment of both of their seasons. Like, if a draw for Liverpool is a bit of a disaster in the grand scheme of things, because it's again chipping away. You assume that City get the job done against Villa, it's again chipping away at their lead. Whereas conversely, if Tottenham end up getting beaten, which everybody expects that they will, they're properly in the doo-doo at that point. Like, it's hard to see them turn it around against some of the lesser teams, maybe, but like that, the idea of them being title contenders is fully flushed down the jacks.
Yeah, is that not already gone though?
Probably.
Like, I'm not sure you can make a case for anybody outside of the top two at this point. And like, Spurs would have been the only real case you could have made at the start of the season, and that's fallen by the wayside by now, I think.
Right, we're about to throw the cards up in the air here ourselves this morning. It's 11 minutes past 9 on this Friday morning, OTB AM. And we've been giving you the chance all this week to win UEFA Champions League quarter-final tickets, all with thanks to Pepsi Max, one of the proud sponsors of the UEFA Champions League. We've picked a daily winner each morning who've all won Pepsi promotional packs and are now in this morning's final at 9:30. And we where a winner is going to be drawn randomly. This morning we asked you to tell us who the highest Champions League scorer was after Ronaldo and Messi in this morning's daily winner. And congratulations to you, Brian Mahan, who correctly answered Raul. So tune back in at 9:30, where we're going to randomly choose this morning's winner of tickets to a Champions League quarterfinal, all with thanks to Pepsi Max. And remember, if you don't win an OTB AM, there's loads more ways of winning Champions League tickets with Pepsi Max over at pepsimax.ie. And Pepsi Max, maximum taste, no sugar. All right, it is 9:12. On this Friday, we've got something special for you next here on OTB AM. The Crappy Quiz, making its return to the airwaves.
OTB AM.
Chris Bond.
Oh, you're kidding me.
September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know, is that right?
Anybody else?
Leash, was it?
Like, that is one of the most stupid questions.
Darius Vassell? Seriously, you all need to just stay quiet. This is getting really annoying doing this quiz.
What is going on here?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome along to the shoddiest segment on Irish radio. It's the scintillating, it's the stupefying, it's the splendido crappy quiz. Every Friday, we pit three of Team Off the Ball up against one another in a quiz of sporting factoids at the end of the week. It is no holds barred, as I forgot to say. Allow me to welcome tonight's contestants. This morning's contestants, I should say, for the first time ever. Our first contestant tonight is a Blackboard Jungle veteran, an All-Ireland history quiz champion, and an all-round sports nerd. He hates when trivia isn't taken seriously. You're in the right place here, John. And he absolutely hates the word crappy. Popping his crappy cherry, give it up for John Duggan, a.k.a. the Dugganator.
Thanks, Owen. I'm really privileged.
Can't believe this is your first time.
Yeah. I really despise the word crappy. I think it's a disgusting word, and it's not fit for any media organisation. And that's why I've eschewed and avoided the crappy quiz. Also, probably feel I'm really rusty when it comes to quizzes. I used to be one of these sharks, and I kind of feel like I'm going to be embarrassed. So that's why I really haven't had the confidence to grace the crappy quiz environment. But obviously, sometimes we need to, as Owen says, pop the cherry.
And does Blackboard Jungle not give you a lifelong lease?
It was 24 years ago.
How did you get on in Blackboard Jungle? Did you do well?
First round, I got 6 out of 6 in sport. Uh-huh. We won the first one, and then we absolutely had a disaster in the second one. There was a 3-point question that we didn't take, we should have taken. And then
was it?
I think it was Bobby Charlton's daughter, Suzanne, was a weather girl or something like that. I can't remember. But then I got 2 questions wrong on the buzzer, and I panicked. And as somebody said in the audience, I needed to be on Valium or something. I was so depressed and disgusted about it. It was a heartbreaking day.
How old are you?
But you're not carrying any scars.
I'm 17. I'm not carrying any scars. Obviously, I am. But I did win the All-Ireland History Quiz that year, which is great.
Nice one. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. In the middle seat is a man who's gone through a lot this week, with his favourite sports person having retired. Gone are the days now of shouting Burn-O, Burn-O in the hill with a can of Pratsky in one hand. He's now got to live a life of trying to persuade people that Brogan is better than Gooch. Give it up for Phil the Power Egan. You're welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
2 months is a long time without a quiz, Phil.
It is, yeah. On Blackboard Jungle, I remember our school won it.
Oh, really?
Now, I was nowhere near the team. But I remember...
You've been a minibus or something, did you?
Ray Darcy rocking into the school and addressing the school on the steps, and we were presented with the minibus.
It's funny, I ended up working with Ray Darcy, and he actually played it on a show, the segment I was in.
And Phil ended up getting a hairstyle like him.
You...
I remember I wore an Ernie t-shirt, remember, from Sesame Street, and that was one of my memories of that day.
You seem to have a very vivid memory of this day.
A photographic memory.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
So you're at an automatic disadvantage here, lads. I hate to kind of bring disrepute into the crappy quiz, but at long last, finally, some disrepute comes. Our final contestant tonight, this morning, is OTB's King of Faux Outrage. He was so goddamn furious with Ireland's performance last weekend that he slammed his cup and spilled a little bit of chai latte on his breakfast almond bun. Cheering on his previous home of New Zealand tomorrow morning, make some noise for Adrian, who's your daddy, Barry?
I don't eat almonds, but thanks all the same.
Allergic?
Yeah. Also, there was nothing to be outraged by. 20 minutes the game was over, and actually you could just enjoy your morning after that.
Right, but of course you're a former New Zealander, so you get to kind of enjoy
it. Absolutely, a former New Zealander, yeah.
How many years did you live there for?
One.
Good year?
Like me, it was an excellent year.
His initials, the ABs.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Phil's on it.
Hammered by the Adrian Barrys.
A former All Black, played for a GAA team, former All Black, also played for the GAA team, and the initiation ceremony was him leading you in the haka.
Individually. And
when you joined the team, this was the initiation ceremony.
And do you still remember all the moves?
Most of them, I'd say, yeah.
We need to do this. This needs to be a forfeit. If you come last in the quiz today, you need to perform the haka for us.
Yeah, that's not happening, but sure.
We should try and do that at some stage. As ever, the format is a classic crappy quiz of 4 questions each. After 4 rounds, is the trivia equivalent of taking every game.
That looks like the Brady Bunch on the screen.
Yeah, it sure is. It's a rapid fire round coming up after that. Then you can podcast the crappy quiz on offtheball.com or the Goal Out app. Give us 5 out of 5, even if that doesn't represent your actual opinion. And please send any questions you have via postcard to Crappy Quiz Quizmaster, Off the Ball Towers, Marconi House, Diggs Lane, Dublin 2. Round 1 is the boring questions round. This round is never multiple choice. John, you're up first. What is the occupation of Bobby Charlton's daughter? No, I'm only messing. Club season is in full flow on the GAA scene, but can you tell me who the 2 losing semi-finalists were in last season's All-Ireland Senior Football Club Championship? So I need 2 clubs who lost the semis last year in the Club Football Championship. Senior level. The photographic memory is at work here.
God, trolling from the quizmaster.
Slot Neil and Kamuka Croaks?
No, I'm afraid not. It was Great Orr and Mullin Yachta. Question 1 for you, Phil. Name the top scorer so far in this year's Champions League.
Oh, why do I think it might be? Is it got to be Haaland, is it?
Correct. Good answer.
Well done. Whew.
Salzburg, it's Haaland.
Erling Haaland,
indeed. Question 1 for you, Adrian. Which out half is currently top scorer in the 2019 Rugby World Cup?
That is a good question.
Yeah, it really is.
Proud of that one.
Very proud.
I'm going to go with... Did he score a try last week? Richie Munga.
No. It's Yutamura. Japan's Yutamura has the most points. 51 he scored, but he's going to be overtaken this weekend, you'd imagine.
That was a tough one.
The other one was easy, but that was tough.
Round 2 is the specialist in quarterfinals failure round. Another year, another Rugby World Cup, another quarterfinal exit for Ireland. Consider this another round where your knowledge of the pain that comes with being an Irish rugby fan matters. Question 2 for you, John. Who finished the 2019 Rugby World Cup as Ireland's top try scorer? Wouldn't get this in Blackboard Jungle. We do need an answer.
Johnny Sexton?
No, Andrew Conway.
Oh, I was going to say Larimer.
Conway with 3 tries. Question 2 for you, Phil. Ireland's 32-point defeat to the All Blacks last weekend was Ireland's biggest ever defeat in the World Cup. But can you tell me which team gave them their second biggest ever battering in the World Cup?
In a quarter final?
In any game.
I'm going to say it was New Zealand.
Correct. You could have actually given me two answers. There was a France. Joint tie for second, New Zealand and France, both in 1995, both by 24 points. So Phil, you're on 2 points. Adrian, of the teams still left in the Rugby World Cup, who did Joe Schmidt have the best record against across all tests during his Ireland head coach tenure?
Percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise, win rate.
That's a bit of a tricky teams left.
Well, to be fair, you're the only one here who's got a multiple choice answer. Assuming you do know the semi-finalists playing this weekend.
That's it's an interesting dynamic, all right.
Gonna need an answer, Adrian.
I'm going to go with, because we tanked them for a lot of those. I'm going to go with England.
No, South Africa. 60% win rate. Funnily enough, the four semi-finalists are actually all the worst win rates that Joe Schmidt had in his tenure. So maybe the four best teams actually did just make the World Cup semi-finals. Round three is the Who's Got More Presents round. In a crappy quiz classic, and you're going to really appreciate this one, John, we'll be giving you the name of two sports people, and all you've got to do is tell me who's got more online presence, a.k.a. who has the most Twitter followers. So question three for you, John. Who's got more Twitter followers, Bernard Brogan or Beauden Barrett?
Bernard Brogan.
Correct. Jeez, that was off the tip of your tongue. On the board, it's right. 1 point for that. Brogan's got 111,000 followers. To Barrett's 99,000.
That's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. I didn't expect that.
What are you really going to say?
Question three for you, Phil. Who's got more Twitter followers, Tom Brady or Brian O'Driscoll?
I'm going to say Brian O'Driscoll.
Correct. O'Driscoll has 970,000 followers. Brady's got 731,000 followers.
So, those two ones were kind of obvious on the basis that they were only asked because you were trying to lead you on a garden path. My one better be the exact same.
All right then, Adrian. Who's got more Twitter followers, Shane Lowry or Brooks Koepka?
That's not a like-for-like question at all.
Give me an answer.
I'm going to say on the basis that he's like a bit of a personality versus a bit like a plank, I'm going to go with Shane Lowry.
No, it's Koepka.
Isn't it? Seriously.
Koepka's got 219,000 followers. Lowry's got 193,000 followers. Unlucky, Adrian. The scores after three rounds are
Phil... I agree with John. This is a stupid concept.
3-1-0, Phil with the 3, John with the 1. Round 4 is a fun-free magic number round. Contestants get 3 points for getting the number exactly right. If no one manages that, the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. The second contestant gets 1 point. I'm going to say that we can only accept the answer that is written on your paper. I'm also going to have to ask for your pens once the music ends. So if you don't mind, give us the following number. The number of All-Star Awards won by Bernard Brogan in his inter-county career, plus the number of goals the Republic of Ireland have scored so far in qualification for Euro 2020, plus the number of British and Irish managers currently managing in the Premier League, plus the number of points clear at the top of the Premier League table Liverpool currently are. Your 30 seconds expires when Sinatra sings Bright Shiny Beads. It's actually less than 30 seconds because this is a sped-up version of Bright Shiny Beads due to copyright restrictions. The number of All-Stars won by Bernard Brogan in his inter-county career. The number of goals Ireland has scored so far in the Euro qualification. How many British and Irish managers are currently managers of teams in the Premier League? And the number of points clear at the top of the Premier League table, Liverpool Football Club are. Pens down. John, what have you got?
21.
21, Phil?
21.
21?
22.
22. Adrian gets the points at 25.
Yes! Get in!
So let's go through these. The number of All-Star Awards won by Bernard Brogan?
6.
4.
4.
The number of goals Ireland has scored so far in the Euros qualification?
6.
6, correct. The number of British and Irish managers currently in the Premier League?
This is the one I came back to. I just took a safe option. I went for 5, but I'd say there's more.
Yeah, it's 9 actually.
Wow. We've
got Rodgers, Potter, Wilder, Smith, Lampard, Howe, Hodgson, Dyche and Bruce. And the number of points clear at the top of the league?
6.
Liverpool, 6 points. So the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. That's
back in the game,
Adrian. And does somebody get 1
point?
No,
we decided previously that if there's a tie, they get no points.
Yes, that is actually very correct. Well remembered, actually.
Yeah, so well, Adrian's on
two points. Phil's on 3 points. John's on 1 point as we enter into the rapid fire round. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that separates the men from the boys, the Bernard Brogans from the Bernie Sanders. It's an old team in particular, ridiculously easy rapid fire round. The score you get in this round will be added to your score in the previous round. There will be 40 seconds rather, for everyone to answer from the same set of questions. So we're going to start with the person with the highest number of points. That's you, Phil. Then move on to this person in second, which is you, Adrian. And then on to the person in last. If you get a question correct, I'll ask you another question and keep asking you questions until you get one wrong. And then if you get a question wrong, I'll move on to the next person. But your incorrect answer also means the deduction of a single point. You ready?
Yeah.
Phil, your time starts. But Matt Williams, you're an outstanding human being.
You're an outstanding human being.
Who got sent off for France in the World Cup defeat to Wales last week?
Vahamahina.
Correct. Who is the women's Wimbledon world champion? A women's Wimbledon champion.
Halep.
Correct. Name either of the teams currently contesting baseball's World Series.
Washington.
Correct. Name the Irishman who was British Flat Jockey of the Year this year. Time's up. Oshie Murphy. Who refereed Ireland versus New Zealand last week, Adrian?
Piper.
No, Nigel Owens. John Duggan. In which city did the 2000 Olympics take place?
Sydney.
Correct. Harvey Elliott plays for which club?
Liverpool.
Correct. Who scored New Zealand's first try against Ireland last week?
Aaron Smith.
Correct. Name the Aston Villa manager. Time's up. Give me an answer.
No, I can't remember.
Dean Smith. So, John, you finish on two.
No, John.
Phil.
Three questions, right? So,
then one, which cancelled it out. And Phil, basically, you're the winner because you're going to finish up on 5 points. And ooh. Adrian, you finish up on one. Congratulations, Phil Egan. We are going to head back to another video. It's going to be a very, very good video, I can guarantee you that. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Crappy Quiz. It's a bit early on a Friday for a Crappy Quiz. It is 27 minutes past nine, but we are going back to Crane Lane Theatre for Cork for a Heineken Rugby Club Roadshow. We were treated to an hour on stage with father and son, John and David Myler. And here's David and his
John
father
Giles.
Acting as his... It's actually a video from John Giles, so ignore all that. Have a look at this.
You're going to get the truth from him as he sees it in the way that he played himself.
Like it or not.
Yeah. And for that, he's. I mean, to be honest, I think he's in a different class to Gary Neville or...
Carragher. As an analyst.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think he's... Not so much for the analytical part of it, but for the straightforward out, this is what should happen. Might not be right, but he'll say it as he...
And he believes what he says.
Of course. And he says it in a very, very forceful way. So I think people watching it, myself included, could say, yeah, I like that. I've seen one, Carragher and Neville, and Neville in particularly. Generally speaking, unless Graham Souness is there, there's nobody to challenge them. Now, when Keane was on that particular, he challenged Neville, and Neville actually started laughing. Do you remember?
Nervous,
as if Roy was being funny. He wasn't being funny.
Yeah.
He was absolutely right what he was saying. Because the thing that Fred didn't do was one of many things that Keane would do. He'd chase his backside off to get back and stop that particular danger. And
John Giles with Johnny Ward during the week last night. Thursday Night Football, check it out on offtheball.com. Indeed, all of our best bits are up there. I shouldn't have rushed the Jaco Piper thing. It was just in the top of my head after all the controversy about the photograph. It was Nigel Owens.
If you'd just been a little bit...
What was the next question after that?
If you'd,
I thought I could have hung on there for a bit after that.
I've got a message from you. There's no crap spelling. It used to be kind of a siphoned off section where there was no sort of any debate afterwards.
No, there should be... I actually would counter that and say there should be an entire section afterwards. You know, they're like... The extra factor or whatever.
You definitely would claim that.
Crapster factor at some point afterwards where you get to crapsplain everything.
Yeah, you would definitely be in favour for that. It's definitely something that I could see you being a part of.
Flourishing in.
That's what you were made for.
Did you think Jaco was fair enough?
That he didn't get a game?
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. Literally, he was laughing at it.
I actually felt so sorry for him.
Why?
I know what he did was stupid and it was wrong. That goes without saying. It was an idiotic thing to have done. But I just felt really sorry for him. Like, he obviously just did it in a flippant, spur-of-the-moment of idiocy, right? But he didn't murder anybody. On the list of grievous things that you could possibly do, it certainly wasn't high up on it. It was just idiotic. And he's obviously been training. He's also in that 4-year cycle where he's training and hoping to get the best games at Rugby World Cup. And in a moment of idiocy, That's where my sympathy is coming from.
Yeah, okay, I can see where you're coming from, but it's not like his rugby career is over. Like, I'm sure he'll be reinstated as...
He'll always be that guy.
He will always... It will taint him, there's no question about that. And if he referees a France game again, there will be a particular narrative around him, for sure. The problem is, he got the decision completely bang on. It was the most obvious decision that any referee could ever make.
That might have been part of his thinking about the photograph, right? Like, it wasn't... I'd say if it had been a controversial sending off, he would have been very aware of staying out of any of the reaction to it.
Yeah.
You got to know that when the photograph's getting taken, it's going places.
For sure. It's just the Welsh fans kind of laughing at the thing. Like,
Welsh fans are... What are you saying about them?
I've gone on quite well with them, actually. There's a lot of Welsh fans who actually watch off the ball. So, I hope
they're listening this morning.
I'd be careful if I were you, Adrian.
I'm also a former... What did you call me? Former... New Zealand, or
yeah,
I'm also a former Welsh person.
Are you?
By that reckoning, in fact, far more Welsh than I am New Zealand.
How many years did you live in Wales? What era was it? During Gatlin's time?
No, it was 1995. My first ever introduction to sports journalism was going into a Wales rugby press conference. It was probably the most intimidating thing I've ever
had
to
do.
God, that's a good question. I know that Rob Howley was an utter gentleman and gave me loads of his time when I was in college at that time, and I was like 18 and I looked about 4. And I know that Quinnell brothers both were sneering at me. I can't remember who the head coach was. And I know that I interviewed Cliff Morgan, the Welsh legend, who then might have been head of BBC Sport around that time. I might have been at that press conference.
And why didn't your...
Passed away in the last couple of years.
Why didn't your Welsh journalism career take off?
Broadcasting legend. I was in college there.
Okay.
And I wasn't necessarily seeking a career at that point. I wasn't at all seeking a career.
And was it the Welsh rugby fans that pushed you away?
Just at that particular moment in time, at the football club, felt that it was... I didn't leave Wales thinking I really want to rush back here. Does that explain things?
It certainly does. You hate Wales.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a huge fan. Right, what are we doing? Right, here's our competition winner for this morning. All this week, as you know, on OTBAM, we've been giving you the chance to win UEFA Champions League quarterfinal tickets. We've picked out the daily winners, as you've been hearing every day, who've all won Pepsi promotional packs. It's all with thanks to Pepsi Max and one of the proud sponsors of the UEFA Champions League. And now, drum roll, it's time for the final. There are four names in our Jigginstown helmet.
There sure are.
Can you please pick a winner from the helmet? Give it a shake. Come on, ruffle it around there a bit.
Look from the helmet, one name.
From the helmet comes the name, who is?
Former guest of the show, Judge Brian McMahon.
It's
Brian Mahan. Oh, sorry.
Owen has butchered the...
Completely butchered that. Brian Mahan is his name. And congratulations to you, Brian. You are the winner.
Well done.
For our Pepsi competition.
Well done, Brian. Fair play to you. It is Champions League quarterfinal tickets winging their way to you. Remember, loads more ways of winning Champions League tickets with Pepsi Max are over at pepsimax.ie. Pepsi Max, maximum taste, no sugar. That is pretty much it from us on this Friday morning. Thanks a lot for joining us. Do stay tuned to Off the Ball and OTB Sports Radio throughout the day. If you've missed anything from OTB AM this morning, we had the rugby with Ronan O'Gara and with Alan Quinlan as well. Plenty of reflection on Ireland's exit and looking ahead as well to the weekend semi-finals. We had the football with Phil Thompson, primarily Liverpool against Tottenham. We had the crappy quiz. It was crappy. And we had the sports pages a bit earlier as well in the show. You can catch the podcast back on offtheball.com/podcast, or you can check it out on the Go Loud app. Watch it back on our YouTube channel as well. And do hit subscribe tonight and Off the Ball, part two of our Heineken Rugby Club Roadshow from Crane Lane. Stay tuned for that. It's going to be epic, as is Friday Night Rugby, Friday Night Racing. Stay tuned for all of that. And loads happening on Off the Ball this weekend. We're live from 1 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday as well. Live all the way through to full times in the Premier Leagues as well. And back on Sunday, 1 o'clock, with the Sunday newspaper review and live Premier League games, including that Liverpool-Tottenham game. So plenty to enjoy. Owen, enjoy your weekend. You're going...
You too.
...to reconnect with the family.
Reconnect with the family, go down home. Probably watch a bit of GAA. Go doubleheader in Fitzgerald Stadium on Sunday.
16th. Tell them about Joint 16th, me and Brent Pope. Influencers, you haven't forgotten that already.
No, of course not. How could I ever forget being joint with Brent Pope on
look
a list?
Look forward to see how those synergies pan out over the next while.
Yeah, it's good. It's the word synergy actually gets funnier the more you say it.
Good morning. Good luck.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
I'm Johnny Sexton, and you're listening to OTB AM.
The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio. OTB AM.
To our man in Japan, here's Owen Sheehan. Where are you, Owen?
I'm in Disneyland, sure.
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates.
In the middle has a big spread on how to play rugby. So I'm going to pour over this. This is very helpful for me. If you are in Japan and don't know the rules of rugby, this particular paper here, I don't know what it's called, is covering that.
Analysis.
You need a rain jacket here. Same time you got to take the top off. Like, it's that sort of thing. I feel like I'm in Marbella, but I feel like I'm in a wet day in Salt Hill as well.
OTBAM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Live from 7:30 a.m. every morning.
OTB Sports Radio.
The Off the Ball Podcast Network.